जय ओं विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमान अभयचरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की जय ओं नित्यलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमान भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ममाचार्य शील हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्यामगुंड राधा गुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मथुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरंग ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रसाद भूदले श्रीमदे भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निधि नामिनी नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय संसार सागरे मग्नं दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्मग्राह गृहीतांगं मां उद्धर भवार्णवात् श्रीमद्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतो सिमया नाथा मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफलः सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपाप प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःखशमन तं नमामि हरिं परं जन्माद्यस्य यदोऽन्वयादितरदश्चार्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वराट् तेने ब्रह्महृदाय आदिगवये मुह्यन्दियल् सूरयां तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकं सत्यं वरं धीमहि धर्मप्रोज्झितकैदवोत्रपरमो निर्मल्सराणां सदा वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा वरैरीश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यदेत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषुभिः तल्क्षणाल् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतद्रवसंयुतं पिबदा भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिया भुवि भावुकाहम् सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रयविनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नुमा यं प्रव्रजन्तमनुपेदमभेदकृत्यं द्वैपायनो विरहकादरमज्जुहाव पुत्रेति तन्मयदयत्तरवोऽभिनेतु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिमानदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपमतिथितीर्षतां तमोन्धं संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्याससूनुमुपयामि गुरुं मुनीनां नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम उवाचि विजृम्भदां मुरारेर्मधुरीं न कनिगावि काविगावि नम ओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निधिनामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणे श्रीमल्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नम वंदे नंदव्रज स्त्रीनां पादरेणुमभीष्णश వ్యాసం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాదీ భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవింద పరమానవే నమః. పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజిత శంఖచక్రం కౌమోదకీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయమతిసుందరమందహాసం వదాలయేశమనిశం హృది భావయామి. కోమలం కూజయన్ వేణుం శ్యామలోయం కుమారక వేదవేద్యపరం బ్రహ్మ భాసదాంబురదో మమ. మూగం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం. శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః. శ్రీమతి రాధికాయే నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం. గోవింద గోవింద. ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవతాం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీ భగవతి అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీ అంబత్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీ. నమోస్తుతే వ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధే ఫుల్లారవిందాయుతపత్రనేత్ర యేన త్వయా భారతతైలపూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీప ప్రపన్న పారిజాతాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకబాణయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః. సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వత్ససుధీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహత్. వసుదేవసుదం దేవం కంసచ్చానూరమర్దనం దేవగీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం. భీష్మద్రోణతటా జయద్రతజలా గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవదీ కృపేణ వహనీ కర్ణేన వేలాకులా అశ్వత్థామా వికర్ణ ఘోరమకరా దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోతీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణనదీ కైవర్తక కేశవా. పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానగకేసరం హరిగదా సంబోధనాబోధితం లోకై సజ్జనషల్పదైరహరహప్యేపీయమానం ముదా భూయాద్భారత పంగజ కలిమల ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసే. మూగం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం. యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణేంద్రరుద్రమరుదస్త్వన్వంది దివ్యైస్తవై వేదై సాంగపదై క్రమౌపనిషదేర్గాయందియం సామగాః. ధ్యానావస్థిత తద్గదేన మనసా పశ్యందియం యోగినో యస్యాందం న విదుసురా సురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం. గోవింద గోవింద. యోంద ప్రవిశ్య మమ వాచమిమాం ప్రసుప్తాం సంజీవయత్యగిల శక్తిధరస్వదాంనాం అన్యాంశ్చ హస్తచరణశ్రవణాం తుగాదీన్ ప్రాణాన్ నమో భగవతే పురుషాయ తుభ్యం. భూతేర్మహద్భిర్యయమా పురో విభుర్నిర్మాయ శేదయ్యదమూషు పూరుష భుంక్తే గుణాన్ షోడశ షోడశాత్మకం సోలం కృషీష్ట భగవాన్ భజాంసి మే. ప్రహ్లాద నారద పరాశర పుండరీక వ్యాసంబరీష శుకశౌనక భీష్మదార్భ్యాన్ రుక్మాంగదార్జున వసిష్ఠ విభీషణాన్యాన్ పుణ్యానిమాన్ పరమభాగవదాన్ స్మరామి. Uddhava told the gopis that I have a very serious message from Krishna and I carry out all the confidential matters for Krishna. Krishna always engages me in very most confidential things. And therefore, that's what he said there. Bhartu ahaskara aham yam adaya agada. Yamad ayagado badra aham bhartu ahaskara. What that means is, all the confidential topics related to Krishna's administration, Krishna engages me for that. And I have got this important message for you from Krishna. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, భవదీనాం వియోగో మే నహి సర్వాత్మనా క్వచిత్ యథా భూతాని భూతేషు ఖంభా యజ్ఞర్జలం మహి తదాహం చ మన ప్రాణం భూతేంద్రియ గుణాశ్రయం. సో కృష్ణ సేస్ దాట్ ఆల్ ది నామరూపం ఈజ్ అన్ ఎక్స్పాన్షన్ ఆఫ్ మాయా అండ్ బట్ దే బికమ్ రియాలిటీ, దే గెట్ ద రియాలిటీ అండ్ దే లుక్ యాజ్ దో దే ఆర్ పర్మనెంట్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ది ప్రెసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ సచిదానందం ఇన్ దాట్. నార్మలీ క్రియేషన్ హ్యాస్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ మోడ్స్, అస్థిభాది ప్రియం నామం రూపం ఆర్ సత్యచిత్ ఆనందం నామం రూపం, రైట్? సో ప్రపంచం ఆర్ క్రియేషన్ ఈజ్ నామరూపం, నార్మలీ ఇట్ ఈస్ నామరూపం విత్ ద ప్రెసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ సచిదానందం ఇన్ దాట్. సో నామరూపం ఈజ్ ఎక్స్పాన్షన్ ఆఫ్ మాయా. మీన్ వాట్ దాట్ మీన్స్ ఈజ్ ఇట్స్ క్రియేటెడ్ ఇట్ స్టేస్ ఫార్ సమ్ టైమ్ అండ్ దెన్ ఇట్ గోస్, విచ్ మీన్స్ ఇట్ ఈస్ క్షణిక ప్రతిభాసం, మొమెంటర్లీ ఇట్ ఎగ్జిస్ట్, దేర్ ఫార్ ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ మిథ్యా. అండ్ బట్ వెన్ యూ సీ ద నామరూపం, ది ఇంప్రెషన్ ఇట్ క్రియేట్స్ ఇన్ అస్ దాట్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎగ్జిస్టింగ్ 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 అండ్ దట్ పర్మనెంట్ ఫీలింగ్ దట్ వీ గెట్ ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ వర్ల్డ్ ఈస్ డ్యూ టు ద ప్రెసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ సచిదానందం ఇన్ ద క్రియేషన్, రైట్? సో మాయా పరమాత్మ చైతన్యం విత్ మాయా ఈస్ డూయింగ్ దిస్ క్రియేషన్ మెయింటెనెన్స్ అండ్ డిసొల్యూషన్, సృష్టి స్థితి సంహారం, ఆల్ ఆఫ్ దాట్, రైట్? సో వితౌట్ మాయా సచిదానంద బ్రహ్మం ఎలోన్ కెనాట్ డూ దిస్ క్రియేషన్ మెయింటెనెన్స్ అండ్ డిసొల్యూషన్ ఆన్ ఇట్స్ ఓన్, ఓన్లీ విత్ ద హెల్ప్ ఆఫ్ మాయా దిస్ ఈస్ పాసిబుల్. సో మాయా నామరూపం ఈస్ ఆల్ మాయా విలాసం అండ్ దేర్ ఫార్ దే ఆర్ ఆల్ బీన్ క్రియేటెడ్ వన్ డే అండ్ దే ఆర్ బౌండ్ టు బి డిస్ట్రాయిడ్ వన్ డే, దట్ మీన్స్ దేర్ డిస్ట్రక్షన్ ఈస్ ఇన్ఎవిటబుల్. సో వేరాస్ ద సచిదానందం దాట్ ఈస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ దాట్ ఈస్ నాట్ క్రియేటెడ్ ఇట్ ఆల్వేస్ ఎగ్జిస్టెడ్ ఆల్వేస్ ఎగ్జిస్టెడ్ and therefore it is Krishna is saying there that it will remain always, it does not get destroyed and it doesn't change. So maya, within maya, with the expansion of this trigunam, three modes of nature, which is maya, and to that maya Sachidananda Brahmam enters into that. So, but that Sachidanandam which comes into Maya does not have a birth or a death. It is always existing. That's the nature of Sachidanandam, right? Similarly, our own gross body, Stula Shariram, everybody, Stula Shariram. And similarly, the Stula Shariram is made of the five material elements which has transformed in this form. The senses, the pranan, the subtle body, all these things is also coming from maya, but with the presence of Sachidanandam. But it is a transformation of maya, three modes of nature, right? So, in other words, satogunam, rajogunam, tamogunam, that is what maya means, their transformation itself. So, in all of them, Sachidanandam is present, right? And these Namarupam will be created one day and it will stay for some time and then they will disappear. Then they will disappear. Whereas the Sachidanandam that is present, it does not have an appearance or a disappearance, right? It remains like that forever. In this way, Sachidanandam present in the Maya, in the Sachidanandam with presence in the Maya, is what is called Ubadana Karanam for the creation. So, that procreation or the maya which is with Sachidanandam, that for the world cannot remain aloof from Sachidanandam any time. Because maya with Sachidanandam has caused the creation. And therefore, The world, if it wants to stay away from Sachidanandam, it is not possible. That is an important thing. And all our body, subtle body and gross body, is all a part of this creation, and in all of them, the Sachidanandam is present there. So, because of Sachidanandam's presence, the gross body, the subtle body, all of them cannot remain separate from Sachidanandam, because it has come from Maya with the Sachidanandam's presence in that. So, it is that same Sachidanandam that is present inside all of us as the Antaryami and as our very soul who is present inside us, right? So, gross body, the senses, the mind, all these things, also Sachidanandam is present as Upadana Karanam. Sachidanandam is present in that, right? Beyond than that, all of us is identifying with the body, and we, what we call as a personality, vyaktitvam, we maintain that, and we are living in that state as jiva. Identifying with the body, we think as jiva, and we live in that state, right? So, we are all that chaitanyam, which is called the personality, individuality. That's what we are, all the jivas, right? And in all of us, in our gross body, senses, mind, all of them, Sachidanandam is present. In everything, there is Sachidanandam present, right? So, individual jivas like us, as Antaryami, as our very self, Sachidanandam is present inside us as our personality. That is what is this Sachidanandam's reflection in the Ahangaram is the jiva. So, here it is saying, Krishna is saying here, Sachidanandam, and if Sachidanandam develops Namarupam and Agasha Swarupam also comes to Sachidanandam, then the appearance and disappearance or the creation and destruction of the Agasham will affect the Sachidanandam also. And that is not happening here. That is what Krishna is clarifying in that verse. Bhavadinam viyogome nahi sarvatmana kvachit bhayadha bhudhani bhudeshu kham vayu agni jalam mahi yatatha aham cha manaprana bhudendriya gunashrayam. So, presence of Sachidanandam is coming from Maya. What Sachidanandam is already present in the Maya, that Sachidanandam enters into all the other things when Maya transforms itself into the gross body, subtle body, everything, right? In the same way, when from Maya, from the Agasham comes, space comes, then at the same time, Sachidanandam enters into Agasham through Maya. But at the same time, even though Sachidanandam is present in the Agasham, it is not sticking to Agasham. It remains aloof. Like Antaryami is present inside us, but Antaryami is not sticking to us. Antaryami is present inside us as the super soul Antaryami, but Antaryami is not sticking to us. Our gross body is changing, subtle body is changing, senses are changing, pranan is changing, everything is changing in us. But Antaryami remains aloof from everything, unaffected by anything. In the same way, Agasham also, when it comes, Agasham is changing because it is a product of Maya. But the Paramatma Chaitanyam, Sachidanandam, what enters into Agasham through Maya, does not get changed, and the Sachidanandam, when it comes to Agasham, does not stick to Agasham like the way Sachidanandam doesn't stick to us. That nature of the Antaryami, that is the nature of Sachidanandam. Satchidanandam, even though it may be present everywhere, it does not stick to anything. So, otherwise, when Satchidanandam also has the same effect like in the Akasham happens, then Ulpati Nasham, that will also happen to Satchidanandam, right? And Namarupam does not stick to the Satchidanandam. Satchidanandam remains aloof from everything. So Satchidanandam remains as Satchidanandam always, even though they are present in the Namarupam, right? So it is Satchidanandam that is present in the Namarupam. Satchidanandam that is present in the Namarupam is the same Satchidanandam that is present in all of us as Antaryami, or which is present as our very self, our spiritual identity. The same Satchidanandam that is present in all the Namarupam is that Satchidanandam that is present within all of us as our Antaryami, and which is our self, our real self, right? With Namarupam, Antaryami or Atma has no contact, no connection at all. And that is what is in the next verse. Alpmanye valpana alpmanam srijehan manupalaye alpamaya anubhavena bhudendriya guna alpmana. That Atma is pure. Is pure, right? It has no connection with Maya, and which means that it has no connection with the three modes of nature. That's what he is saying here. Agunalpana. See the word? Agunalpana. Agunalpana means that it has no connection with the three modes. And that is what? Pure Satchidanandam. And the Maya, which is the three modes of nature, it has no contact. Only thing is, it is present in Maya, but it is does not, just like Krishna is present inside us, but Krishna has no connection with us. When we mean us, the jiva, or with the gross body or the subtle body, Krishna has no connection, but Krishna is present inside us. That's a relationship, right? Or they say, the example is the in the pot, the space is inside, right? When we look at the pot, we say there is a space inside the pot. But if you break the pot, there is not two different space. That space is gone. It is one with the space outside. Space inside, space outside. When you break the pot, there is only one space. Before that, we were saying there is space inside, there is space outside. In the same way, in this body also, Krishna is inside, Krishna is outside. If we break this pot, called body, then there is only one Antaryami, inside or outside. There is no Antaryami then. Antaryami is only because of the body we say there is Antaryami. Otherwise there is no Antaryami. Antaryami concept is only because of the presence of the body, right? So, similarly, Satchidananda Paramatma is present in the Maya. When Maya expands also, Paramatma Chaitanyam, there is no change, right? But when Maya is expanding in everything, Paramatma Chaitanyam is present. His Chaitanyam is present, right? So, therefore it is said that Satchidanandam has no connection with the Trigunam, three modes of material nature, or to any of the Namarupam, which is a transformation of the three modes of material nature, and Paramatma has no contact with anything. And therefore, he is saying he is beyond the three modes of nature. The reason for that is, he is mentioning here, that the reason for that is, Atma is Jnanamayam. Look at the next verse. Atma Jnanamaya Shuddho Vedirikto Agunashraya Sushupti Sotnam Jagratbir Maya Avrti Bhiyate. That Because the Jnanamayam it is, that is why it is like that. Jnanamayam. Jnanamayam means its consciousness, bodham it is. And therefore, Shuddha Bodha Swarupam, that is the nature of Atma. And therefore, it has no connection with the Trigunam, three modes of nature. Or either with the Trigunam or transformation of the Trigunam. Trigunam transformed is all the gross body, subtle body and everything. It has no connection with any of those things. It remains aloof from everything. Why do we say it remains aloof? Because the nature of the Atma is its pure Bodha Swarupam, Shuddha Bodha Swarupam, or Shuddha Sachidananda Swarupam. That is the nature of Atma. That Atma has no connection with Maya or the expansions of Maya. And therefore it does not stick to Maya, or it has no connection with Maya either. It's just like they give this best example is this pot, a huge pot, but there is inside space, outside space. You break the pot, there is only one space. There is no two spaces then. So space is created by this pot. Because of the presence of the pot, we say space inside, space outside. But once you break the pot, there is only one space in the same way, right? So, Atma, or what we call Atma, Aham Atma Jnanamaya Shuddham Vidirikto Agunashraya. So, the Adharam, the foundation is this Chaitanyam, Atma, right? And so, within all of us, when we say me, that Ahankaram inside, and That also is because of the presence of Antaryami inside. Because the presence of Antaryami inside, we as Jiva identify ourselves as me or a person like that. So that is called Abhimanam. This Abhimanam Vritti, it is a Vritti. Like Manas is a Vritti, Buddhi is a Vritti, Ahankaram is also a Vritti. Vritti means something happens within our subtle body which makes us to, as a wave, it comes in us. So, this vritti or adharam, in order to feel this ahankaram inside, in order to feel the ahankaram inside, like everything, I am doing this, I am going there, I slept, I ate. This I, who is this I? What we are talking about, that is Ahankaravritti. That's called Ahankaravritti. So that Ahankaravritti is dependent on this Antaryami inside. Only when Antaryami is inside, this Ahankaravritti will happen. And this Chaitanyam, because of this Atma Chaitanyam inside, these three states we experience, Jagrat, Supnam, Sushupti, right? So if it is like that, how do we say that the Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, it has no contact with that? And that's what he's saying. Sushupti, Supna, Jagrat, Bir, Maya, Vritti, Bhiriyate. Right? Within the mind and in the buddhi, in all these things, when Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam comes in, only then these three states happen. That's important thing to realize. That when the when three modes of nature enters into our mind, intelligence and the subtle body, that is when we experience these three states, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. It has nothing to do with Antaryami inside. That's an important point. Krishna has spoken this in the Ekadasham also. Yeah, yes. So, so this Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti is a transformation of the subtle body. Andhakaranam. It's avastha bhedam. It changes. So these things are happening because of the subtle body. When we get to deep sleep, when we get the dream state, and it's a very, very, very fine thing it is. Intellectually you can imagine so many things, but its effect on us, the three states, how it impacts on us in our subtle body and how these three states comes to us. So, depending on the intensity of the three modes, we will fall into one of these three states. Right? So, but beyond the subtle body, pure Sachidananda Paramatma remains as Antaryami, and he remains as our self, real self. This jiva is not the real self. It is a temporary experience due to the reflection of the Antaryami in the subtle body. So, and Antaryami remains not touched by the three states, not touched by the subtle body, remains simply as a witness to everything what is happening inside. So, therefore, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, in all these three states, Antaryami remains as a witness. So, but without Antaryami's presence, those three states won't happen. That's also there. These things are very important in the Bhagavatam, because what Krishna is saying is that before self-realization, there is a sort of other things to be realized. And Paramatma has no direct connection with these three states. Paramatma has no direct connection with the three states, right? He is a witness of, or the sakshi, or the witness of everything. So again, it is not difficult to understand that depending on the three modes of nature, our three states also will change. In other words, you can have a dream state in the waking state if the rajogunam increases. Similarly, if tamogunam increases, you could have a deep sleep in the waking state also. Like this, all the three states and the three modes are interconnected. Depending on the intensity of the three modes, the three states will change within us. So, when Sattvagunam is dominating us, at that time, we are in the Jagrat state. Out of these three states. It's not that if eyes are open, we are in the Jagrat. That's not what it means. If Sattvagunam is inside a lot, is controlling us, then we are in the awakened state. What that means is, in Sattvagunam, you will be more receptive to spiritual life. Otherwise, you are very dull, as Krishna says about every one of us. Mutha, mutha, he keeps calling us, isn't it? Repeatedly. Why are we mutha? Because we are so dull. And that dullness is coming from this Rajogunam and Tamogunam. And Krishna is saying that, if that is why Krishna is always saying this, improve your Sattvagunam, improve the Sattvagunam. Sattva sanjayate jnanam, Krishna says, right? So Sattvagunam is the one that strengthens our spiritual life, not Rajogunam, Tamogunam, right? So due to Sattvagunam, all our senses and subtle body wakes up. It is very receptive at that time, right? And that state is in the way it works like that, is called the Jagrat. That means the subtle body is very receptive to spiritual understanding of life. Even to get that spiritual understanding is so difficult, is it not, to people, to get across to this point, because that dullness, the Jogunam and Tamogunam, is deep inside, and therefore to wake up from that is very difficult. So therefore, they have given these three names also, that in the Jagrat states, the Sachidananda Pramam inside, he is called a Vishwan. And similarly, when the Rajogunam increases within us, you are in a state of a dreamy state, dreaming about things all the time. So much dreams going on in the head, right? And Sachidananda Brahmam is responsible for that also, because without Sachidananda Brahmam's presence, that Swapna Avastha or the dream state cannot happen. And that Sachidanandam Brahmam at that stage is called Taijasan. That means Rajogunam has become prominent at that time within us. Therefore, we fall into a dreamy state, all the time dreaming about things, right? Similarly, when Tamogunam comes in, automatically you can't think, you can't dream, you go into sleep, mode of sleeping. That means Tamogunam has taken over, right? And at that time, Andaryami, who is present at that time, because without Andaryami, that Tamogunam also cannot do that. And that Sushupti Sakshi is present there, he is called Prajnan. Prajnan, right? All these names have a lot of significance, but to understand that, you have to study Vedantam a little bit more and in the Upanishads. And that's where you will understand why these names have come to Sachidanandam, Paramatma. How Paramatma has been designated with these three names, right? So simply to understand that depending upon the intensity of Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, these three states also happens to us. Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, right? But so Sachidananda Paramatma has no connection with them as such. Only thing is, it allows the three modes of nature to enter into our subtle body and makes us experience these three states. But it has nothing to do with it, right? And so that's why this message what Krishna has sent to the gopis is a sort of message which Krishna will talk to Uddhava later in detail. But the message is the same. Message doesn't change. And it is the same message what Prahlada has also spoken in his talk to his friends. Is it not? So spiritual message, to get it transmitted to us, the rishis have tried very different methods to get the message to us through stories, through different personalities, through Prahlada, through Krishna, and through many other instructions, like Angiras Maharshi talks to Chitragedu, the same thing. All over you will find this in repeatedly in the Puranam, so spoken like this. Somehow or the other, to get the message into our beautiful brain, to get it accepted within us, because our nature is, because of this Rajogunam, Tamogunam predominating within us, is difficult for to be receptive to such messages, right? So what was Krishna saying to gopis? Krishna was saying to gopis that you cannot be separated from me under any circumstances. That was the point he was making to them. You are lamenting and crying about me, the form of me. But form is not the thing. Form will be there sometime, form may not be there tomorrow. Form will be gone. That doesn't mean that I have gone. I am present in every one of us, in one of you, Krishna is saying. And my presence is throughout your body, gross body and subtle body. And even if you want to separate yourself, you cannot. That is the message Krishna has given there, right? So then he mentioned there that in the next verse, that yen indriyarthandhyayedam rusha sopnavadutida tan niruddhyad indriyani vinidra pratyabhadyada, 32nd verse. Said, sopnam, when you wake up from sopnam, then he thinks that sopnam is a false thing. When he wakes up, only when he wakes up, he says, oh, I was in a dream, you say, as though it has nothing to do with you. That's the way we make the statement when we wake up from the dream, right? Similarly, when we wake up, when we realize the self also, you will say the same thing about this body, gross and subtle body. You will say the same thing. Just like when we wake up from the dream state to the wakened state, we say, what do we say about the dream state? Oh, it was not real, it was just a dream. We reject it as though it has no significance. In the same way, when we realize the self inside, we will say the same thing about this gross and subtle body, that they were not real. That's what Krishna is saying. By saying this, it doesn't happen. It has to be realized only then, at that time. So all the Namarupam, or all this creation, is Kshadiya Pratibhasam. It has no reality. Krishna keeps saying this, isn't it? Body is not real. The world is not real. But it is not getting in. Just by preaching to others, it won't happen. It has to happen within us. And that is where all the problem is, right? So, Kshaniya Pratibhasam. Sachidananda Paramatma is only truth, right? Namarupam is all mithya. And only the Sachidananda Paramatma that is present inside this package is the truth. Rest, everything else is false. So, so Sachidananda Paramatma is present there. Therefore, at the moment you can talk about this body, talk about the subtle body, mind, intelligence and everything. Otherwise you can't talk about it even, because it has no existence. It's because it came from Maya, and it is made of five material elements, both gross body and the subtle body, and therefore they are not real. So, in this way, in that verses, I have repeated that, we have spoken this before, only for one reason, that in this 46th and 47th chapter, this message from Krishna to the gopis is the most important part in that. So, as he said, that when self-realization happens, what does self-realization mean? Self-realization means able to see this everything as Sachidanandam. When you realize Sachidanandam here in this world, then Namarupam disappears. Sachidanandam becomes your realization. You realize only Sachidanandam then, not the Namarupam. Now, for us, like Hiranyakashipu, everything is Namarupam. Is it not? We are seeing everything in the form of Namarupam. That was the same problem Hiranyakashipu had. Hiranyakashipu is seeing only Namarupam. Prahlada is seeing only Sachidanandam. In the story form, it was spoken with the pillar and Hiranyakashipu hitting the pillar with the sword, and Hiranyakashipu asking Prahlada, Narasimham, where is he? Prahlada is saying, that Narasimham refers to the Sachidanandam. I'm only seeing Sachidanandam, Prahlada is saying. He is not seeing the pillar. Hiranyakashipu is seeing only the pillar. He is not seeing Sachidanandam. So that is why that clash between them, between Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu. This fine principle, if it's spoken directly, it won't stay. So therefore, through Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu and the pillar and all that, it is spoken. Somehow or the other, let the point get inside the head. It doesn't easily get in to the people. So when Prahlada says, I am only seeing Sachidanandam, means I am seeing Krishna everywhere, nothing else I am seeing, which means he is only seeing Sachidanandam everywhere. That's what it means. When he says, I am only, not that in the Krishna, he is seeing Krishna in the Namarupam everywhere. Not that, please don't misunderstand that. That he, Prahlada is seeing only Narasimham everywhere. Everyone is a Narasimham then. That's not how it is. What Prahlada is seeing everywhere is pure Sachidananda Brahmam. It is a realization inside. And that realization, he is not seeing Namarupam anymore. He is seeing the Sachidanandam present in all the Namarupam. What we have spoken so many times. And that realization, the shift that has to come from Namarupam to Sachidanandam has happened to Prahlada. Therefore, Prahlada is seeing only Sachidanandam everywhere, not Namarupam. Whereas, Hiranyakashipu is not realized. Hiranyakashipu is seeing only Namarupam. He cannot see Sachidanandam anywhere. Exactly opposite to what Prahlada's state was. And that's the same principle Krishna is talking about here. So, realized soul recognizes this, right? And in the sopnam state, for example, all that what you saw in the dream state, sopna padartham, right? How you realize when you wake up that they were not real? In the same way, in our present state, when we are in ignorance, deep ignorance, right? You are busy with the mind. Mind is saying so many different things, right? Mind is busy with the sense objects. And it is busy through the senses, enjoying these sense objects, and that is the nature of an ajnani, or an ignorant person. A person's ignorance is like that. Through his mind and senses, he is enjoying the sense objects. That is his present state, right? And the reason for his sense gratification is, the two things are the mind and the senses. They are what is connecting him to the sense objects, right? So, in order to move away from that, and to give this experience insight that his identity is Sachidananda Paramatma, in order for that, in order that to happen, the mind with, and the senses, mind which makes the contact with the sense objects through the senses, they have to break that connection. They have to break that connection, right? They should not be allowed to make the contact with the sense objects, right? It is for that purpose that senses have to be turned inwards, andarmukhatvam, right? And attracts the mind and the senses inwardly, and that is called manoniratham. You can see that Krishna is saying that, right? This tenth canto is manoniratham. Nirodho muktirashraya, he says. So what does manoniratham means? Manoniratham means forcing the mind and the senses not to make contact with the sense objects, instead turn inwards and break that connection with the world outside, to the sense objects, right? So all sadhana is for that purpose, for this manoniratham, right? Vedam, yogam, sankhyam, austerity, tapasya, sannyasam, all these things are for manoniratham. That's what Krishna is saying here. Edadanta samamnayo yogam sankhyam manishinam tyagam tapo damam satyam samudranda ivavaga. All these things, what we do, the sadhana, everything process is for this purpose. Krishna is saying there. And when that happens, when the mind, manoniratham happens, it goes into Sachidananda Paramatma and sadhaka experience that reality, right? With that, when that happens, he sees the creation as Sachidanandam. That is when he realizes the Sachidanandam presence, and Namarupam has disappeared once for all from him, right? So, I know you may think why I am repeating this again and again. Reason for that is, it is very hard to get this message in the head. That is why. So, at that moment, always to remember this, that permanent thing is only Sachidananda. It's the only permanent thing, right? And Sachidananda Paramatma's presence, to experience inside in that way, is self-realization. So, and at that moment, he realizes that only Sachidananda Paramatma is present in every one of us as reality and not this body, gross or subtle bodies, right? So when Krishna said all this message was given by Uddhava, the response from gopis were that why do you tell us all this Vedantam and put us more into difficulty? They don't want it. It's not, human nature is like that. Nobody wants to hear Vedantam. They are just happy to do their own life in their own way and be happy with that. Vedantam disturbs people's mind. It makes them put into more difficulties because their normal existence in Maya is affected. Like the way we normally live in this world. They get disturbed when Vedantam is spoken. So therefore the same way gopis also responded. Why do you tell us all this Vedantam and puts us into trouble? Because it only causes more difficulty for us. We are just happy the way we are. Everybody does that. Every jiva's nature is like that. Right? But Krishna is saying here, and then they say to him, we are actually concerned that you are not with us. After hearing all these things, the response is like this. So you can see how the jiva responds. Every jiva is like this. The nature in the spiritual life is like this. Then we'll hear everything and then we'll again say to Krishna, oh, why are you not with us? Why you have kept us away, right? So Krishna says to them, this viraham, separation is required for continuous smarana, right? And at least you will remember me like this, and in course, but once you become absorbed in me, right, then you will be able to experience me as Sachidanandam at a later date. So only for giving this experience that I am remaining separate from you. In order to create these thoughts deeper inside, so once you get absorbed in it deeply, deeper level, you will feel that separation is not real. It will come to that, he said. So, anyway, gopis heard all this, the message, which is pretty heavy message for in their position to understand or to accept it, right? But when they heard this message from Uddhava, you should not think that suddenly they realize the self. It hasn't happened, right? Actual realization happens to them in Samanda Panchakam, later, when Krishna spoke to them directly, right? And till then, they lived like this, thinking about him, thinking about the form, and they kept spending their time like this, right? So, but there was a glimpse of that realization, temporarily, when Uddhava told them to keep their eyes closed and to look inwards. When they closed the eyes and looked inwards, they realized Krishna is inside. So that is a glimpse of that self-realization given to them. But that suddenly, when they opened the eyes, it's gone. It's disappeared. Again gone back to the form. Got attached to the form. So that's the important part. As I was saying before, yesterday, that this Vedavyasa Maharshi's effort to get this point across to us, how far he has to work hard seeing our pathetic state, that the message is not going in. Let's look back into that fifth chapter when Vedavyasa spoke about this to Sri Narada Maharshi. So, if you go back into the fourth chapter, you will see there, in the first canto, that Vedavyasa Maharshi, the reason why Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled, yeah? And that story is spoken there in detail. Who is Vedavyasa Maharshi? Vedavyasa Maharshi is Krishna himself. And if you look at his birth, mother is Satyavati Devi, father is a great rishi, Parashara Maharshi. Vedavyasa Maharshi's father is Parashara Maharshi, right? They gave him the name Krishna. His name was Krishna. Because he was born, the history is there in the Mahabharata, how he was born and all that. When he was born in an island, he was given the name Dvaipayanan, Deva island, Dvaipayanan was given to him. So they combined these two names together, Krishna and Dvaipayana, and he became Krishna Dvaipayana. That's how the name came, Krishna Dvaipayana. What this Krishna Dvaipayana did, who later on came to know as Vedavyas, that he divided the Vedam into four, and Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam, Sama Vedam, Atharvana Vedam, and then he became Vedavyas. Because he divided the Vedam like that, he became Vedavyas. Otherwise, his original name is Krishna. Then because he was born in an island, he was called Dvaipayana. And they combined those two names together and became Krishna Dvaipayana. And then when he divided the Vedam into four, he became Vedavyasa Maharshi. He taught this four Vedam, after dividing them into four, he taught them to four disciples, Paila, Jaimini, Vaishambayanan and Sumandhu, in four Vedam for four disciples, right? And therefore, they are his disciples, right? And you will see there, mentioned there, Atharva Angirasa Asil Sumandur Dharino Muni Idihasa Puranam Pidame Ramaharshana. He also taught the Idihasam and Puranam to Ramaharshana, Sudha. The reason why he taught Idihasa Puranam to Ramaharshana and Vedam to other four disciples is, the four disciples are qualified being Brahmanas. Ramaharshana or Sudha is a Shudra. So therefore Vedam was not taught to him. They were all very rigid in these things. And Idihasa Purananam Pidame Ramaharshana. Ugrasravas is saying this. Sudha's son, Ugrasravas is saying, my father Ramaharshana was given an Idihasams, Mahabharatam and Ramayanam, and all the Puranams were taught to him. All the Vedams were given to Sumandhu and Jayamini and Paila and Vaishambayana, all the four disciples, right? Then, ta eda rishayo vedam, suam suam, vyasanya anekatha, shishe, prashishir, tachishir, vedaste shakino abhavan. Afterwards, when this was all done, right, in spite of that, nobody was coming to study Vedam. Nobody was interested. After doing all these things, right? So, even though Vedavyasa Maharshi taught them to the disciples and to Ramaharshana, everything, gradually the people, ordinary people, they have no interest in anything. As usual, they have no interest to understand the truth, what they were talking about it, right? So, Vedavyasa Maharshi was very disappointed at this stage. He is doing his best to get the message across, but the message is not getting in. First of all, people have no interest to know it, and they have no taste for it, right? So, what he did was, and he is working very hard, because he knows Kali Yuga is coming, people are going to suffer a lot, and there will be a lot of misery around. Knowing all that, what he did was, at least let me do something. This Vedam, they will not study anyway. Neither Idihasam Puranam. They are not willing to, Idihasam they are going to study. So what he did was, he took the core message from the Vedam and simplified it as much as possible. And this Veda Tattvam, to that he added a lot of stories into it. And then he wrote a lot of books after that. That is called the Puranam. All the Puranams are the message he has taken out from the Vedam and the Upanishads, everything, the core message, and took and simplified it as much as he could, and he added stories to that and created a new set of literature called Puranams. That's how Puranams have come. So Vedavyasa Maharshi thought, or he expected, that people will take serious interest in the Puranam and they will read and study that. He got disappointed. People had no interest in that either. And then he realized that this is not working. So you can see his frustration, how much he is frustrated with everybody. So he is saying there that because it didn't work, even Puranams didn't work, then he wrote Mahabharatam. He realized that at least through Mahabharatam, and that is a huge composition, 125,000 verses, and he thought that the reason why they are not showing any interest is because of impurities in the mind, polluted mind, impurities in the heart, therefore they have no taste for it. So what can you do? So in order to do that, he thought that they are not moving in the path of dharmam. So let me talk to them about dharmam. So focusing on dharmam, he created Mahabharatam. And he gave Mahabharatam to this world. Even that people had no interest. In following dharmam also, all people who are interested is what? Work hard, earn money, go shopping, eat as much as possible, whenever it's possible, sleep as much as possible, and enjoy the senses. This is a normal state of the human society. All the time it has been like that. It's not different any time. So when he saw this, that even after writing Mahabharatam, people had no taste for it. Right? So he wrote all this literature for the benefit of the world, but there was nobody to read any of those books, right? And that is the time Vedavyas felt his desperate state inside. He felt very desperate inside with what has happened, right? You can see there, agradarthada. That's the word. You can see he has used that word, agradarthada. Agradarthada means total disappointment inside. In the fifth chapter, if you look, Sri Narada Maharshi, they are saying there, adhabishojasyalpmanam agradarthamiva prabho. Agradarthada. Agradarthada means total disappointment from everything what he has done. He has put a lot of effort in doing this, in dividing the Vedam, then writing the Puranams, writing Mahabharatam. How much effort he must have put into that to compose all these things. And then when he finds that everything was a waste of time, nobody has been benefited from that, and therefore agradartham iva prabho, he was feeling agradarthada, right? Then he thought about this. It is at that time Sri Narada Maharshi comes there. And Narada Maharshi, wherever he goes, he is welcomed and worshipped by people, wherever he is. If you look at the fourth chapter, Pooja, last line in the fourth chapter, it says, Pujaya Masa Vidivan Naradam Surabhujidam. Narada Maharshi is worshipped when he goes to heavenly planets also. Surabhujidam. Even they worship him when he goes there. Right? So, Narada Maharshi's nature is like that. Even demigods or devadas on the heavenly planets, they worship him. Right? So, Narada Maharshi came and Vedavyasa Maharshi offered a seat to him. And then he said, you look at the verse, he says to him that the way Narada Maharshi addressed Vedavyasa is, didn't call Vedavyasa Maharshi by name, Parasharya Mahabhaga, he says. Parasharya Mahabhaga, Bhavada Kachidalpana, Paridushyati Shariram, Alpa Manasameva Chaam. He is son of Parashara, he says. And he began like this because the reason for that is Parashara Maharshi wrote a very famous Puranam called Vishnu Puranam, right? And you should write a similar Puranam like Vishnu Puranam, another famous Puranam like that. And by addressing him Parasharya, Narada Maharshi was saying to him, if you write a book like the way Parashara Maharshi has written, your father, who wrote Vishnu Puranam, If you can write a book like that in a similar way, and then you also become glorified like the way Parashuramashi was glorified. Parashuramashi became popular because of writing Vishnu Puranam. It is through Vishnu Puranam Parashuramashi became popular. So, similarly, he says to Sri Narada Maharshi, says to Vedavyas, if you can compile a Puranam like that, and you will be a deserving son of a great personality called Parashara. That's why Parasharya Mahabhaga, that you will be recognized in this world as the son of a great personality, because you will be glorified in the same way like Parashara Maharshi is glorified. So that's what is coming from that, right? So Narada Maharshi says to him that for the benefit of this world, you have written a lot of books. Vedavyas says to him, right? But still, you are not happy. I am aware of that. You are not happy about it, he said. And Vedavyas Maharshi agreed with that. But I don't know, he said, why I am not happy with the way it has happened, right? And you have to tell me the reason for that. And you are a person who says here, Sri Vedavyas Maharshi's words, if you look, he says to him that you are a person, asyevame sarvamidam tvayoktam tathavi alma paridushyato me tanmulam avyaktam aghada bodham prachamahe tvam alprachamahai tvatmabho alpmabhudam. You are in a state of consciousness, aghada bodham, much deeper level realization you have, right? And tvam paryadan arkam iva trilogi andal sharo vayu iva almasakshi paravare brahmani dharmato vradai snadasyami nyunamalam vijakshuam. That you are like air present in everyone's inside and outside due to self-realization. You know what is happening in everyone, inside, outside, right? So, and you are the son of Lord Brahma. Narada Maharshi says to him, in reply, he says, Bhavado bhavada anudida prayam, yasho bhagavado amalam, yenai vaso na tushyeda, manyeta darshanam khilam. That you have written about dharmam, artham, kama, moksham, everything, right? But you did not glorify about Krishna. In the Krishna's fame did not come through that very well, right? For example, in Mahabharatam, Bhagavad Gita is there, right? And have you not spoken about Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita? Yes, you have spoken about Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, right? But you have spoken about Krishna in such a way, when you have spoken about so many other things, you have spoken about Krishna also, along with that, right? And that's all you can say about Bhagavad Gita. When you spoke about Bhagavad Gita in Mahabharatam, in Bhagavad Gita you have spoken about Krishna, but several other things you spoke in that Bhagavad Gita, along with that you have spoken about Krishna also. That's not enough, right? If you ask the question that who is the hero in the book, you should be able to say very specifically, Krishna is the hero. You should be able to write a book in that way, right? So, when you are talking about Krishna, you can talk about any other topics, what you want, related to Krishna, you can talk about that. Because of that, nothing wrong in that. But the main hero in the whole discussion should be centered around Krishna. Should be centered around Krishna or Krishna's glories, right? It shouldn't be that we are talking about so many other things, along with that you have put some Krishna's glories also. Not in that way. Krishna should be the center. And you talk about Krishna, along with that you can talk about other things as well, nothing wrong. But when somebody reads a book, they should feel who is a hero in the book. Krishna is a hero. That way it should come out. This is how Narada Maharshi started the conversation. It's a very interesting conversation, this fifth chapter. If only if you understand what all the message is, you will see how deep the understanding of life is in the Rishi's heart, right? So, important point Narada Maharshi said was that you are saying so many things along with that some glories of Krishna. That's not good enough, right? Main topic should be talked about Krishna, right? And that's the only topic that should be discussed all the time in life. This is what Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas. The only topic of discussion in life should be only Krishna, nothing else, right? What is the point in talking about other things, he said, right? That is what, you know, some of the things what he said there. Tadvayasam tirthamushandimanasa nayatra hamsa niramandyushikshaya. In the ninth verse he said, natadha dharma vasudevasya mahima anuvarnita. Then in the tenth verse he says, tadvayasam tirthamushandimanasa nayatra hamsa niramandyushikshaya. You have to write a book in such a way which can be relished by paramahamsas and great yogis and the jnanis, right? That means it is a literally way of saying that you have to create a lake in which they can bathe, who paramahamsas can bathe, or yogis can bathe, or rishis and jnanis can bathe. It should be good enough for them to bathe. They are not people who are interested in mundane literature. But the literature you are going to produce should be such, they will relish it. Such great personalities, rishis and jnanis, right? And when you are talking about Krishna, it is not important that your language has to be very high, the standard of your language. The sentences could be broken. The grammatical mistakes could be there, right? Or you may have pronounced certain words different from the way it is spoken traditionally. Things like that, right? Nothing wrong in that, he says. That is that 11th verse he's saying. Tadvad visargo janathaga viplavo yasmin pradishlogam abadhavatyabi nama nyanandasi yashongidaniyal shrinuddi gayandi grinandi sathava. The message is this, that the topic about which you are talking about is more important, not the way how you have spoken about it. The topic of discussion is more important than your language through which you have spoken about the topic. That's the way Sri Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas. It doesn't matter, there can be mistakes. Sentences could be broken, verses could be faulty, or letters could be mispronounced, things like that. Doesn't matter. As long as it is centered around Krishna, because the topic is more important. So that was the instruction from Narada Maharshi to Vedavyas, right? And you shouldn't talk about anything else except Krishna. That should be the only topic of discussion. You wrote all these literature so far, right? So write one more. And in that literature, simply glorify Krishna in every way, right? And one important message Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas, in that book when you write, you have to tell the world one important principle. From now onwards, nobody should feel distressed in life. You shouldn't feel distress in life, right? And you can see how much people are in distress in this world. Everybody knows that. without saying, some people may accept it, some people won't. But if you have some intelligence to analyze this world, you will come to this conclusion once. It's a suffering from beginning to end. Yeah. The reason may be different, but everybody has distress in one form or the other. Distress can be in different ways. For householders, they have the distress, so we didn't have children. Or we had children, but they didn't grow up very well. They became rebellious or they turned troublesome later. All this, everything is distress only. Not having children, distress. If the children have come and if they didn't turn out well, then distress. Right? And then sometimes the children die, distress. There's no guarantee that they will live forever. So they will also die. Sometimes their children die when they were small and then gain distress. Right? Similarly, wealth. You had a lot of wealth. All wealth lost in business or something else, in transactions. You lost all the wealth. Or somebody cheated. And one way or the other, you lost all the wealth. And then distress. Right? Then diseases comes. Attacks the body. All treatment failed. Distress. So, it is a story of distress, our life in this world. First of all, we have to recognize this. And that we won't do that. We will look for some happiness within the middle of all this distress. Can we get some happiness in somewhere, in some form? And we'll be searching for that. This is the human nature. Right? So, day to day, if we look at our life, it is from distress to distress. Right? So, how do you become free from this? Can we live in a state where there is no distress? That's the question he is asking, right? They give this example that if you keep on living in this distress throughout, it is like, say, you are in a boat and the boat is trying to cross the river. When it came to the middle of the river, there was a whirlpool. And in that whirlpool, this boat is not moving any direction. It is going on like this, rotating in the whirlpool. And our life becomes like that. It's all distress everywhere. And this side distress, that side distress, front side distress, back side distress, up distress, bottom distress. And we are running around within the inside of this. So therefore, he says to him, you should tell this world loudly that everything that is happening here in this creation is Krishna's leela. Everything is Krishna's leela here, what is happening. And therefore, there is no need to feel distressed about anything. This was the message what Vedavyasa Maharshi was told by Narada Maharshi to convey to this world. To see this whole thing just as a Krishna's leela in that way, right? So, what we are seeing here is Krishna's leela, nothing else, right? What is happening today is Krishna's leela. Whatever has happened in the past is Krishna's leela. What is going to happen in the future is also going to be Krishna's leela. So, if this way, if you have started seeing everything is Krishna's leela, then from that day onwards, you won't feel any distress about it. You should be able to stay with hands like this and look at this world and seeing everything as Krishna's leela, if you are able to see like that. Why do we say like that? Leela means what? Leela means it's a play, is it not? So, play, nobody get distressed in play. For example, you go and watch a cricket or football or a tennis or chess or whatever it is, right? When we go there, what do you go there for? To have some fun. Nothing more than that. You don't get distressed because of that. By seeing a cricket, these days people get distressed. But people with little sense, they won't get distressed. Nowadays they so identify so much with the football, so much with the cricket and all that, and then they get distressed after that. So that, you can't help those people. They are in such a desperate state. But average person, he goes and watches the game and have a match, 2 couple of hours, some fun, and he comes home after that. Yeah. So when you watch the match, what's your state of mind? It's a play at the end, isn't it? One will win, one will lose. In that way you watch the match. Vedavyasa Maharshi says, Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas that this world is also like that. Krishna has created this, it's his leela it is, right? And it is not for you to get distressed about it. It's not meant for that, right? You can enjoy every other game, but you cannot enjoy Krishna's game? That's the question he's asking. You can enjoy every other game, football, cricket, chess and everything, but you can't enjoy Krishna's game? That's a little bit too much to say like that, isn't it? Krishna's game also, you should see and enjoy it, what the way it is dying. So this Krishna's game is like this. In three games he plays here. What are they? Creation is one game. That means everything is created all the time. Creation is going on. Continuously creation is happening. That is one side of Krishna's game. Another side of Krishna's game is, whatever he has created, he maintains it for some time. That's another game Krishna is playing. And the third game is whatever he has created, he gets destroyed at the end. That's another side of the game. So these three games, Krishna is playing continuously here. And if you are able to see that as Krishna's game, which means creation, sasrashti sthiti samharam, creation, maintenance and dissolution. If you are able to see that as Krishna's game, then you won't feel distressed. You won't feel distressed. Now we are not able to see it like that. We are taking all this so seriously that this world is so real. And everything here is so real for us. Body is real, the world is real, family is real, house is real. Everything is so real that we are trapped in that and unable to get out of it. And feeling misery, misery after misery, day after day and suffering from that. So then Narada Maharshi says to him, if you are able to see it like that, why distress? Why distress, right? And if you have understood these three things, creation, maintenance and dissolution properly, you can remain every time in a happy state, right? So, only thing is, it is created, it stays for some time, and then it gets destroyed, right? So, Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas, life is meant for looking at it and enjoying it that way, right? And they give this example, when you go in the seaside, suppose there is a rock, you will see continuously waves coming. One wave comes, a big wave comes, hit the rock and gets smashed into pieces, right? Immediately followed by another wave comes. Again hit the rock, smashed into pieces, right? So, and it doesn't stop. Just because one wave got smashed, you don't have to worry about it because another one is following. The next one is coming. And when that gets smashed, you don't have to worry about it because another one is coming. In this way, continuously it is happening, right? In the same way, in this creation also, lot of things are coming out, creation, created, right? People who have studied history to some extent, they can understand this very easily, right? Take for example, last 1,000 years. Just take for example, if you have studied history, you know this. Take for example, last 1,000 years, right? How many nations have been formed in these 1,000 years? America was formed about 250 years or 300 years ago. And so many other nations also were formed at different times. India was not there like the way it is spoken now as India. It didn't exist at that time, 1,000 years ago. So constantly nations are created and destroyed. And no nation will stay like this forever. It will stay for some time. After some time, the boundaries will change, somebody will invade somebody else, and the whole geography will change. Right? So, in these 1,000 years, if you take, how many nations were created, and how many different cultures were formed, different civilizations existed in different places. Egyptian civilization, Roman civilization, Greek civilization, Indus Valley civilization, Chinese civilization, all these civilizations, where are they now? Every one of them are gone. Every civilization has gone, disappeared from that. Is it not? So, all of them were created, stayed for some time and then disappeared, right? Similarly, if you look how many cities were created and they lived for some time and their importance also gone, in due course of time new cities were created, old cities were gone, and like this continuous turmoil and changing nature. So things were created, maintained for some time, and they were destroyed. And when they were destroyed, in their place something new has come up. So in this way, this whole world is constantly in flux. Creation, maintenance, dissolution. Civilizations come, empires have come. British Empire, Roman Empire, Ottoman Empire. So many empires have come. Mughal Empire, where are they now? They've all gone. Came and gone. Like while in a morning walk, Prabhupada was saying this to the devotees in France, that they were showing to Prabhupada different things related to Napoleon's time in France. So Prabhupada says, they are all here, but where is Napoleon now? He says, where is he? Nobody knows. Where is he? So you are glorifying all these things because you have not come to terms with the reality of life, which means that they have no permanent existence. All of them. All these civilizations, empires, cities, cultures, all of them are just a part of this Leela, of Krishna's Leela, of that's what Vedavyasa Maharshi is told by Narada Maharshi. You have to tell the world to look at this Leela, as a play, and able to watch this and enjoy it, and not get affected by it. That's the message, right? And they give this example that, like in the ocean, like the waves come. They will come, all these cultures will come, samskarams will come, they will stay for some time, and then they will disappear. So, like you enjoyed the waves coming and hitting the rock, how they came and they gone, in the same way they have come and gone. And they will come and go again in the future, right? So, the main principle to learn from this is, anything that is created will be destroyed. This fundamental principle, right? Therefore, one should not get distressed about it. One should not get distressed because anything that is created is bound to get destroyed. That fundamental principle, right? Because everything what you see here is not permanent. Is not permanent. And just like the waves, every wave will be smashed when it hits the rock. In the same way, everything in this creation will be destroyed. Right? So, what we see in this world, nothing is permanent. If this is all going to get destroyed, if everything is going to get destroyed like this, then if I start thinking, my house will stay. Everything else will be destroyed, but my house will stay. If I start thinking like that, what should he call me then? I'm the biggest idiot, isn't it? If everything is going to get destroyed, but my house will be okay. If I start thinking like that, I am the biggest idiot, right? So, thinking about it, you can see that nothing is going to stay here, including our own house, it's going to get destroyed. Then the next question, is this body going to stay permanently? Because every body is getting destroyed one day or the other. Is your body going to stay? No. It is not going to stay. Like everybody else's body, your body is also going to go, right? Then, is your children going to stay? No, they also won't stay. They will also have to go. Is your wealth going to stay? No, that will also go. So, in this way, to see this creation, maintenance, dissolution, Krishna's Leela is continuously going on in this world and come to reconcile with that fact, and able to learn from that is intelligence. This is what Sri Narada Maharshi is saying to Vedavyas. Get this message into their heads, he said. In a very, very disturbing way he said this to Narada Maharshi. Because Vedavyas was trying to get this point across to our head. But it's not getting in. And therefore he says to him that intelligent person and will think that none of this is permanent, right? These are created, it may stay for some time, may not stay for some time. Some will get destroyed, that's all. Therefore, an intelligent person will not cry about these things. Children are dead or children are gone wrong and wealth is gone. And in all these things, not to lament about it. That was the message, right? And similarly, when people lose their position in this world, they get upset. They have some position in this world. When the position is questioned, they get upset about that, right? So, all this is Krishna's Leela, right? Suppose you had children, that is Krishna's Leela. If the children died, that's also Krishna's Leela, right? Krishna gave it and Krishna took it back. That's all. And here, it's only me. And your job is only to look at this and enjoy it as Krishna's Leela. In that way, right? Not to think that, oh, I got children now, feeling very happy about it. And, oh, the children have gone and feeling distressed about it. What's the point in talking about it? It makes no sense, right? So, in this way, everything that is here is Krishna, right? And everything what is happening here is Krishna's Leela. And the greatest player in all this thing is Krishna. Krishna is the player, right? And if you are able to recognize that and offer respects to Krishna, then you don't have to suffer in this world. You don't have to suffer in this world. If you are able to see it like that and offer obeisances to Krishna. So he said to him that convey this message to the people of this world, right? That life is not meant for feeling distressed all the time. On the other hand, life is meant for happiness, and this you should convey to them in very clear terms. Make them understand this message, he said. And that's why if you look at the verse, 14th verse, what is he saying there? He says that tathonyada kinjana yadvivakshata prithak drishastal kradana rupanam abhi na katra kutrajal kwabija dustida madir lebheda vadahadana uri vaspadam. You may find it difficult when you read the English translation. The reason is, the language is of the sages, the rishis' language, right? We are not used to that. And when you translate into English, sometimes you may not get the actual purport of the message. What? It is very difficult to get the message across. He says, Tatho anyadha kinchana yad vivakshada. If you interpret all these things in any other way, he says, Tatho anyadha kinchana yad vivakshada. In some another form, if you interpret these things, pradak drishakthal krida rupanamabhi, you will get trapped in the form of Namarupam and you will suffer from that. That's what he is saying there, right? So, if you say anything, any of these things in a different way, these people will suffer for whole life. They are not going to get out of it. They will be in suffering whole. All what will happen is, we will suffer from birth to death and then we will go from here. That's all what's going to happen, right? So, instead of seeing everything as Leela, Krishna's Leela, if you don't see like that, what does that mean? What does he mean by that, by saying that way? To see it as Leela, not otherwise, means that, what it means that, if you don't see it like that, that means that you have mamata inside, attachment to the world in different forms. Husband, wife, children, money, world, home, all these things are objects of attachment. They are not real. We know that when you think about when you leave this world, what connection have we got with any of them? That's broken straight away, right? So, and then otherwise you will be crying here. I lost this, I lost that, and I didn't get this. That didn't work out well. In this way, you have only one thing in life to do, lamenting and lamenting and lamenting all the way through. Right? So, Narada Maharshi says to Vedavya, that's why that one line covered this whole thing, what we have talked about. Tatho anyadha kinchana yad vivakshada, it says. If you interpret this whole thing in a different way, It means what will happen is prudagdrishasthal krada rupanamabhi. You will be caught up in the rupanama rupam, and the result of that is that you will suffer here on different reasons, right? And you will never become free from distress whole life, right? That means me and mine, these things will build up within us, right? And that has to be given up and realize this, that Krishna's Leela, Krishna has created this Leela, is it not? Creation, maintenance and dissolution is his Leela. Continuous Leela is going on, right? In that way, seeing it as a Leela is important. Then what will happen is, our life will become more blissful. If you start seeing it as Leela, right? And then he told him, I don't have to say all these things to you. Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyasa, right? Because you are Krishna himself. You are not different from him, right? And Krishna doesn't have to take a birth. There is no reason for him to take a birth, right? But still you were born. Why? That's the 21st verse. Tvam altmana altmanam amayahya avehya amokhadrikka parasya pumsam paramaltmana kalam ajam prajadam jagata shivaya. That's the word. Ajam prajadam jagata shivaya. He took this birth as Vedavyasa Maharshi for this purpose. Jagata shivaya, for the benefit of this world. Right? So, ajam prajadam jagata shivaya. Right? One who does not take birth, ajam he is. He doesn't take. Bhagavad Gita also says, isn't it? Ajobisan avayalma, he says. Same thing. Ajam. You don't have birth. Krishna doesn't have a birth. But you have taken a birth like this. As Vedavyasa Maharshi. For what purpose? This is Narada Maharshi saying to Vedavyasa all these things, right? For the benefit of the world. In order to give them some relief from their misunderstanding. To give them some light in their ignorant life. To give them some light, right? So, what was the message? Nobody should feel distressed in life, right? And because life is not meant for getting distressed. Life is not meant for getting distressed. Life is meant for self-realization. For Krishna consciousness. To cultivate Krishna consciousness, life is meant for. Not for feeling distressed. And this message, he says to him, that if you take this seriously, if you come to the process of bhakti, then you won't feel distressed, right? And this you should convince people. That's the message. You should convince people this message. Life is not meant for distress. Life is meant for cultivating bhakti and to realize the self, right? So, if one comes to properly in bhakti process, then you won't experience distress. You won't experience distress. And you should convince this to people, right? And you have been born for that purpose, Vedavyasa Maharshi, right? I am not saying this in a casual way, in a relaxed way, he says, because if you come to bhakti process, you won't feel distressed in life. Sri Narada Maharshi says this, right? And whatever happens in life, you'll be able to accept it all as Krishna's mercy, provided you have come to the bhakti process. If you have taken to bhakti process, right? And then, you know what Narada Maharshi said? If you don't believe me, he says, I am telling you, he said, it is my own experience. And that is how he said, he started talking about his past. What happened to him, to Narada Maharshi, right? So Narada Maharshi says to him, in the previous birth, I was an orphan boy. Me and my mother lived together, right? And the relationship was, you'll see people like this in many places. Mother and son will be there. Or mother and daughter. So the relationship will be like this. Mother will be always thinking about the child. Child will also be thinking about the mother. Because they don't know sometimes who the father is. And there's no other relations in this world. And there are so many people like that. You will find that all over, right? So we didn't have any place to live. We were just wandering around. Narada Maharshi is saying this. We were wandering around, me and my mother together. We were wandering around everywhere. And therefore we lived in several places. And by chance, we got to a place where there were some people who were very absorbed in studying Vedam. Vedanyam, they are called. People who study Vedam. And we went there looking for some shelter. And our livelihood was, my mother will do some work. And I'll help my mother in daily livelihood. She will do some work and people will give some money or some food for them. For her. They were in a very desperate state. And that's how we were moving around like that. And it so happened that we came to this place where their Vaidika Brahmanas were living together. And when we got there, they told us to stay there. Because they wanted some work to be done, cleaning and sweeping the place, washing the pots. So Narada Maharshi has also started with washing pots. So we don't have to feel shy about it. When he came first time, mother and the son were given the same duties, right? But what was the benefit of that? The great benefit of living together like that, that Veda Dhvani, he could always hear them chanting the Vedam. The Brahmanas there, they were reciting the Vedam. And we could hear that every day. That was the benefit. What is the Veda Dhvani means? In Upanishads, there are certain Veda Mandram, which is meant for creating auspiciousness everywhere. Badram karnebi shruniyama devaha. Badram pashyemi kshubidami jaitraha. All it means is this, that this type of mantram, Badram karnebi shruniyama devaha, Badram pashyemi kshubidami jaitraha, that only we should see good things. Whatever we see with our eyes should be good things. And similarly, whatever we hear through our ears should be auspicious things only. This is that prayer. Basically, that's what it means, right? So every day we were hearing this mantram. Upanishad mantram, that is. And we were waking up in that way, right? And then they were doing the deity worship and all that in their system, right? And we will go there and we will look at them, what they were doing, right? And they will give us some flowers and tell us to put the flowers in, ask us to offer obeisances to the deity. And we will do it, although we didn't know anything. We were doing that, right? Then after the puja or the worship, they used to give us some prasadam. And we used to take that. And they will tell us when the next puja is. And they'll tell us to come back again. And we used to go there. In this way, we realized that we can do some help for them. They have a big garden. There was lots of flowers there. And they needed a lot of flowers for this worship. So me and my mother used to pluck all the flowers for them. And similarly, we used to make garlands for them. So this kind of things we started doing there. And also, whatever they have cooked for offering to the deities and for themselves after that, they will put all the pots together there. Me and my mother used to wash them, all the pots, right? So in this way, and then the place requires cleaning. This is all what we knew. We didn't know anything else. So we used to clean up the place. And when we did all these services, we didn't talk about any salary or anything. We just did this and they gave us something to eat and a place to sleep. So they were happy with us. And we were also happy that we had something to keep our life going, right? And they were very compassionate to us. They were very kind and compassionate to us, right? And because they were so kind and compassionate to us, we also felt like staying there and feeling very respectful to them for their kindness, right? So, in this way, we lived there for some time. When it was going on like this, by accident means by unexpectedly, it so happened, a few sannyasis came there for their Chaturmasyam. We didn't know anything about Chaturmasyam and all that. But some sannyasis came, and these Vaidika Brahmanas, they have allowed them to stay there for a few months, right? So because there were few people, and they needed several things, my mother and me together, we couldn't do this everything. So they told me to look after them. Whatever they need, you should do it for them. That's how I was engaged. Narada Maharshi is saying there. Right? And I found that I would become independent now from my main service. I was given another service to look after them. And I found that very interesting, serving those sannyasis. Right? The reason for that is, they were always talking to each other so many interesting things. And me as a child, five-year-old child, will go and sit there listening to them what they were talking to each other. Right? And the system was one person will talk for some time, the rest of them will listen to it. And then I thought it was very interesting. I didn't have to do anything. I just have to sit because I had a lot of time. And my job was just as I was sitting there as a servant. If they want anything, they will tell me, bring some water or bring some, clean up this place and things like that I used to do. So that was my service. And I was solely deputed for this service of looking after this sannyasis. So I am not allowed to go anywhere. So I had to sit there. And I was enjoying it. They're talking to each other, he says. And I was 5 years old and they were looking at me when they were talking to each other. And they realized that this child has some interest in listening to us, what we were talking about. And actually they felt a certain attachment to me, a compassion towards me, right? So what they did was, they started talking things in a much more simpler way, so that a five-year-old child can understand. They changed their language to make the child understand what is going on, right? So everything they spoke in a very simple language, and when they spoke in a single language, initially I could not understand many things what they were talking about, but when they started talking in a simple language, I started understanding it better, more than before, right? And I became more interested, and when I got more interested, they got more interested in keep talking about it, seeing my enthusiasm to hear that, right? So they made it very interesting, the stories. And every day I used to sit and listen to this, what they were talking about it. And how days went on, I can't even tell you, he said. Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, how the days have progressed. It was so fast like this. And I was really enjoying that association with these sannyasis who had come, right? So, they were interested in talking about it. I was interested in listening to it, right? So, this was my life at that time. In this way, it so happened that over a period of time, they started thinking, helping me in many ways. They felt that after they have eaten, they will leave some food for me, after their remnants. They leave that for me, and I started enjoying that, the prasadam what they left, right? In this way, how much mercy I received from them, I cannot say that. Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, right? And one day, they decided to go. They decided to leave, right? And I felt so distressed that I was enjoying the stories what they spoke, because sannyasis, obviously, this was their main focus of talking about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, and all the Puranams, everything was discussed, right? So, I was very distressed when I came to know that they were leaving. So what I did, Narada Maharshi says, I went and offered obeisances to them and told them told them that if you all go away, who will tell me these things, what you were telling me all these years, right? I'll be very unhappy, he told them, right? And I was crying when I said that. And you can see that in that verse, 24th verse, if you look in the 5th chapter. Te maya bedha agila chabale arbhage dande adhrada kridanage anuvartini chakra kribayadya vidulya darshanam shushroshamane munayo alpabhashini. That chakra kripayam means that they felt, when I started crying, they felt so much compassion for me, the sannyasis, right? And they all put their hands on my head and blessed me, he said. And they told me, don't worry about anything. We will tell you a mantra. Keep repeating this mantra. That is that mantra what was given. Namo Bhagavade Tubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradhyumnaya Niruddhaya Namasangarshanaya Cham. That mantra was given, right? And they told me, you chant this mantra, right? You will one day see Krishna. You will see Krishna one day, they told me. Saying like this, they left, right? From that day onwards, all the time I was chanting this mantra, right? And that was my life. Even now, I am doing the same thing. I am chanting that mantra, and this is my situation today, he said. And right now, all the time, I don't think about anything else except Krishna. Except Krishna, and meditate upon him and live my life, right? And what has brought me to this situation, I know how this has happened. In this last life, I started this, chanting this mantra. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya Namasangarshanaya Cha. Right? And I chanted that mantra and I got these blessings from the sannyasis. Therefore, you should also do this one thing. What was that? I've told you to write a new book, haven't I? He said. In that book, two things you should stress in that book. Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas. One, the power of mercy of Mahatmas. Power of Mahatmas' mercy. Second one, the power of Krishna consciousness or sadhana, bhajana or sadhana, in other words. Power of sadhana and the power of mercy of Mahatmas. When these two things come together, your spiritual life will become successful, he said. And these are the two things you should stress in your book. Power of mercy of the great Mahatmas and the power of sadhana, right? So, if we have to read like that, and if you study it like that, he said, that's why that chapter completes with that. Tomapyabhadrashudavishrudam vibho samapyadeyena vidam bubulsidam Agyahi dukher mukherar didalpanam sam kleshanurvana mushandi nanyatha. Again, Sri Narada Maharshi is saying there that you have to feel that they should feel that they got what they wanted after reading your book. That's the way it should be, right? And your book should be for that purpose, right? After saying this, Narada Maharshi got up and Vedavyasa Maharshi told him that you have not completed the story, right? The sannyasis have left. What happened after that? Vedavyas got interested in this story, right? You look at the last words, you see what he's saying there. This is the thing, you see, if you study Bhagavadam, if you don't get these messages right, then you're not getting Bhagavadam inside. Tomapya badrashuda vishrudam vibho samapyade yena vidam bubulsidam. He's saying there that This is what makes their life happy, that they will start seeing this creation, maintenance and dissolution, nothing but Krishna's Leela. And they will be able to observe it in that way, rather than getting attached to everything in this world and suffering from that. And that message, important message, he says, Akhyahi dukher muhur ardhidalpanam sam klesha nirvana mushandhananida. Only if you look at it this way, you will become free from distress. Otherwise, sam klesha mushandhi nirvanam, you have no relief from suffering. Throughout life you will suffer, he says. Na anyatha, there is no other way. Saying like that, Sri Narada Maharshi wanted to continue further, and that is the next chapter, sixth chapter, which we will talk about after a few minutes. Chedo darpanam arjanam bhavamaha davagni nirvavanam shreyakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidhyavadhu jivanam anandam buddhivardhanam pradipada purnamrita swadhanam sarvatma subat vidhayade shri krishna sankirtanam namna amagari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatra arpida nemida smaranena kala eda advishi tava kripa bhagavan mamabhi durdeivam edrishamiha jani nanuragam trunaravi shuni jena taroravi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari nathanam najanam nasundarim kavidam mo jagadishakamaye mama janmani janmani ishware bhavadal bhakti rahai dugitvai ayi nanda tanuja kingaram padinamam shame bhavam budhau kripaya tava pada pangajastita duli sadrisham vichindaya nayanam galada shrudharaya vadanam gadgadarudhaya gira pulager nichidam kadavabhu tava namagrahane bhavishyadi yugaidam nimeshena chakshusha pravisha idam shunya idam jagal sarvam govinda virahename ashlishya vapadaradam pinashtumam adarshanam marmahadam karyotuva yathathathava vidathathulam bhado malpranadha sunayevana para sarvatra govinda nama sankirtanam govinda govinda. So Sri Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas, you should stress in your new book what you are going to write, which is Srimad Bhagavatam in front of us, two things. One, the power of mercy, of Mahatma's mercy, and secondly, the power of sadhana, importance of sadhana, right? Vyasasya, Sridhara Swami says this, Vyasasya pratyayartham ja shaste prag janma sambhavam so bhagyam narada praha krishnam sam kathanol bhavam. The opportunity what Veda Narada Maharshi got in his previous life to serve the Mahatmas and able to hear from them about Krishna, that is what he got in his previous life. It is because of that I have come to this state now where I am. That is the message in this chapter, in this coming chapter. Sridharajani Swamiji's summary of that. This chapter is like that. He's saying there, Narada Maharshi is saying, the opportunity he got to serve the Mahatmas, those sannyasis whom we were referring to, and able to hear from them about Krishna's glories, and because he got both these things in his previous life, therefore, I have come to this state where I am now as Narada Maharshi, right? And Narada Maharshi mentions this to so bhagyam, his own luck, Narada, praha, krishnam, sam kathanol bhavam, that he says this to his own story to Vedavyasa Maharshi in this chapter. So, what happened? So, Narada Maharshi continues the story of the previous life, right? The sannyasis blessed me and they left. And I continued chanting this mantra. Namo Bhagavate Dubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradhyumnaya Niruddhaya Namasangarshanaya Cha. This is the mantra I have chanted, he said. There were a lot of work to be done at home, but whenever I was doing any work, I was chanting this mantra, he says. I was sweeping the floor, Namo Bhagavate Dubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradhyumnaya Niruddhaya Namasangarshanaya Cha. Right? I was washing the pots, chanting the mantra, Namo Bhagavate Dubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradhyumnaya Niruddhaya Namasangarshanaya Cha. Right? I was making garlands and chanting the same mantra. And whatever I was doing, I was chanting the mantra, right? And when all the work is finished, I used to sit alone and chant the mantra. Namo Bhagavate Dubhyam, right? So, after chanting a lot, I will slow down. Sound also will become very little at that time, right? And the lips will only chant the mantra. There was no sound coming out because I was getting tired like that, right? And I noticed that suddenly Krishna starts appearing in the heart. I get a feeling of the presence of Antaryami inside. And when I am doing all these things, suddenly my mother will call me. And my mother is always anxiety about me. All the time. That's all she was thinking about, right? And then when she doesn't hear any sound from me, she will say, where are you? She will call me. And I have to go ask her, why have you called me? Then she will say, no, I just wanted to see where you are. And Naradamar, she is busy with his sadhana, and the mother is busy in finding out where he is, just to show to us the mother's state of consciousness. Difficult for her, in her present state. Same with Kayathu, you know what happened. Narada Maharshi gave all instructions to Prahlada. Nothing worked. Prahlada says the same thing about his own mother. Nothing gone inside to her. This is the problem with that body. These are the difficulties in life. That Prahlada understood, staying inside the womb, Kayadu heard everything, nothing happened to Kayadu. Here also, the mother didn't understand anything. Sri Narada Maharshi has taken the message seriously. What was given to him by the sannyasis, right? So, when I go and ask my mother, why did you call me? She will give me some work to do. And after that, then I'll do that work so that she does not give me trouble. And I'll go back and start chanting again, right? So, in this way, and most of the time when I was doing the work, I was chanting also it in my mind. But ultimately I started saying Krishna within the heart, right? And when I am seeing Krishna comes in the heart, my mother will call again. And I want to see Krishna directly because they have told me that I will be able to see Krishna if I chant this mantra, right? So Krishna understood my situation. So what Krishna did was, he took my mother away one day. That's not, you can see that in the Bhagavatam, how it has spoken, right? That you can see how Narada Maharshi talks about his own mother, exactly like the way Prahlada told about his mother. He says, Egalpajame janani yoshi mutha cha kingari. Again the word mutha. This mutatvam will increase in that body. That's the problem. Yoshi mutha cha kingari. My almaje ananya gadav chakre snehanu bandhanam. Through this affection and attachment, they bind you. Affection and attachment is a problem in spiritual life. And with that, they bind you. And with the result was that my mother, he says, Egalpajame janani, my mother, Yoshi mutha ja kingari. She is mutha, kingari. Then ananya gadav, she didn't have anybody else. Because she didn't have anybody else to love, she loved me so much. Because she had nobody else to love. Ananya Chakra Snehanubandhanam. And she bound me with her love, says Narada Maharshi. She bound me, Snehani Bandhanam, right? Then, there are many verses there. He says, Krishna took her away one day, because my mother is a whole problem now for me. And Krishna understood that. And therefore, Sarpa Dashalpada Sprashta Krivanam Kalachodida. That's the answer for that, right? So, one day, in the eyes of the world, he says, she was bitten by a snake, and she died. And what did I think about it after the death? He says there, and I did not sin. Anugraham manyamana. I consider that, you can see in the verse 10th, right? Narada Maharshi, what he said about his mother's death, anugraham manyamana, Krishna has blessed me by taking her away. Can you imagine a son saying this? That's what spiritual life is all about. That to understand that Narada Maharshi, this is the mercy of the Mahalpas. Mahalpa has woken up that spiritual awareness inside, made him to think in this way. Because of that association, he got the knowledge and the knowledge worked for him. This is the proof of that. Otherwise, in ordinary life, a child will cry if the mother dies at the age of 5. The child will never say this word. Anugraham manyamana. Krishna wanted to bless me, so he took her away. But in the eyes of the world, she got bitten by a snake and died. That's the difference between the mundane world and the spiritual approach, right? So, tva tada tada hamishasya bhaktanam shamam abhipsada anugraham manyamana pradishtam dishamuttaram. When this happened, Narada Maharshi says, I got convinced that I have Krishna's mercy. That he's making every arrangement in my life to suit my spiritual life. Whatever attachment I had that attachment he took away. And that was his mercy. He said, that is how spiritual life is, right? So I understood that Krishna's mercy is coming to me in this way. And this is what happens in Bhakti Yoga. If you come to Bhakti Yoga, this is how life changes, right? I was 5 years old, but when I came to Bhakti Margam, when my mother died, I took it as Krishna's blessing. And this is Bhakti Yoga. Srinarayana Maharshi is saying this, the great authority on Bhakti process. So we also have an opportunity to see how far we have gone in the Bhakti Yoga. This is the test. These are the tests. And this is an important chapter, this 5th chapter in the first canto, that its devotee state is like that. Devotee means this, that he is seeing that 5-year-old child, because he came to Bhakti process, when the mother died, he is considering that as a blessing of Krishna. So, a devotee can always talk about only one thing, Krishna's mercy and Krishna's blessings, right? He can only think in that direction. He can't think it in any other way. So he says, my mother died, and with that I understood that my prarabdham has changed, he says. Arabdha karma nirvanam nibadal panchabhautiya. Srinarayana Maharshi is very clear about prarabdham. People don't accept this prarabdham. Many people find it difficult, right? So prarabdham is there. But prarabdham will change itself to suit the bhakti. If he becomes a devotee, bhakti, right? So he says, my prarabdham has changed and all my prarabdham is over. Because when the mother was there, she had to make sure that that the mother is happy, not to upset her. Because he has put so much affection towards him. And therefore it was difficult for him to break away from that. Krishna has removed that prarabdham in one stroke, took her away, right? Now he says, I don't have to say goodbye to anybody. So I left that place, he said. I walked away from that place where I was staying, and all along I was chanting this, Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam, Vasudevaya Dhimahi, Pradyumnaya Aniruddhaya, Nama Sangarshanaya Cha, right? And kept on chanting this, and I walked and walked and got into a forest, and sat down underneath a peepal tree. And I sat there and chanted. You see the power of that instruction from the sannyasis, how it has affected him. He took it so seriously that non-stop he was chanting. And at one stage Krishna appeared within the heart, right? And I was feeling blissful, but it didn't last very long, only for a very short period of time. And then Krishna disappeared, and again I continued chanting, right? At that time, I heard a sound within myself, that in my heart, in this lifetime you won't be able to see me again. That was the sound, right? Then, what does that mean? When Krishna says, in this lifetime you won't be able to see me again, it implies that in your next life you will be able to see me. It is included in that. That's the way it is. In this lifetime you won't be able to see me means that in next lifetime you will be able to see me. Right? So I was very happy. I have to only wait for just the body to go, isn't it? One life only, after all I can live with that, at least in the next life. So Krishna gave the impetus to continue the Bhakti Yogam further from that. Right? So I continued chanting, and I was not there to compete with anybody in this world, he says. Competition is not my... Nowadays people talk spiritual life in terms of competition also. You have to compete always. In spiritual life also you have to compete. And where these ideas had come, I don't know, but Narada Maharshi is saying there, I was not there to compete with anyone, right? And I didn't talk to anyone, I didn't compete with anyone. Always I was chanting, and that's what he is saying there. If you look at how he passed his time, 27th verse. Namanyanandasya hatatrapapathan guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran gam paryadan tushtamana gadaspraha kalam pradikshan vimato vimalsaraha. Namanyanandasya hatatrapapathan guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran gam paryadan tushtamana gadaspraha kalam pradikshan vimata vimado vimalsaram. I carried on and I used to chant the mantra loudly sometimes, right? And I didn't care whether anybody is looking at me or what they think about me, right? Whether they insult me or glorify me, it didn't matter to me, right? I had only one desire. What was that? To die. So that I can see Krishna immediately. That was his desire, to die at the age of 5 or 6. The child is saying this, right? We may take it as childish. It's not childishness. It is that effect of the sannyasi's mercy that has come to him. That he says, only if I die I will get another birth, right? Only then I can see Krishna. So I was waiting. And every day I was sleeping at night, and when I wake up I used to think, oh, I didn't die. Again I have to live for another day, right? And sometimes I heard somebody died or someone else died, and I was thinking, when is it going to come to me? When will it happen? Not out of fear, but wanted it badly, right? I was thinking that the death does not want me. Why does the giving out to everybody else death comes? Why I'm not getting it, right? So then when natural disasters happened, I was thinking that maybe I will die in this cyclone or drought and things like that. When it happened, I was thinking I might get death, but I wasn't dying, right? But I was happy to die through a cyclone or a drought or an earthquake or any such thing, right? In this way, I was living, waiting for the death to come, right? This is the state of mind of a devotee. A devotee always thinks, when will death come, right? Not living in fear all the time, oh, I will die, and think, not in that state of fear, but instead, when will I get the opportunity to leave this body and go from here? And if he is a proper devotee, how to leave this world in memory of Krishna. Remembering Krishna, right? In this way, Narada Maharshi says, so A devotee's situation is like this. He is not fearful about death. He is waiting for the death to come, and he knows that this you will see in the Bhagavatam in several places. Kunti Devi left the body like that. They say that Kunti Devi left the body like a man sheds his clothes. That's the way she left. Draupadi followed in the same way. So they are all examples of how devotee is leaving the body, right? So then he says here that I was more in a rush to get back to Krishna. I was not bothered about the death. He was thinking like this. A child, isn't it? 5 year old. And he's thinking like this. If I die, I'll go back to Krishna. That's what I was thinking, he said. And then suddenly it happened. And then waiting. Eventually it happened. And I was born as the son of Lord Brahma. Right? And Brahma told me about Krishna's glories in detail. He spoke to me. I have started chanting the holy name in my last birth and meditation on him and the mercy of the sannyasis. And in this way, I have reached this state where I am now, right? What is my present state now? So, if I chant the holy name of Krishna, Krishna's form will appear within my heart. If I chant the holy name of Narayana, Narayana's form will appear within my heart. If I chant the holy name of Shiva, Shiva's form will appear within my heart. Right? So, whichever name I chanted, that form will appear within my heart. Right? So, and then he says that previously what was spoken, again he is repeating there. What is that? That while two things, importance must be given to that. One, the power of the mercy of great personalities, right? And second one, the power of sadhana, bhajana or sadhana, and its power, right? These two things you should combine together, and if you write a literature, a book on that, it will benefit the whole world. Saying this, Narada Maharshi walked away from there, right? So all these stories, in Naimisharanyam, Sudha Goswami is saying this to Shavanaga Rishi and all others who are present there, right? Ultimately, Sudha Goswami told them, we have to say who is the most fortunate person. Fortunate person in Shastram, they call it as Dhanya. Who is Dhanya, right? And that is that last verse you can see there. Aho Devarshi Dhanyoyam Yal Kirtim Sharanga Dhanuna Gayan Madhyan Nidam Tandra Ramayat Yaduram Jagal. Last verse, 39th verse in the sixth chapter. Gayan Madhyan Nidam Tandra Ramayat Yaduram Jagat. So, who should be told Dhanya or fortunate? Aho Devarshi Dhanyoyam. And he has only this business, who? Sri Narada Maharshi. One, go to people who are in distress and console them through talking to them, Srimad Bhagavatam. And secondly, absorbed in Krishna. These are the only two things what Narada Maharshi does. After saying this, Narada Maharshi has left and Vedavyasa Maharshi gone into meditation. But before Narada Maharshi left, that's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, they say that Narada Maharshi, Vedavyasa told him, I will do what you have told me. But certain times, I will find it difficult to write Srimad Bhagavatam. And at that time, now and then you should come and verify what I am doing is proper. Things are happening in the proper way. Now and then you should come. And the proof of that is the seventh canto. When seventh canto came, you don't see anywhere Sri Shuka Vacha. It's all Sri Narada Vacha. Reason for that is, when it came to talking about Prahlada, Vedavyasa Maharshi thought, it is better Narada Maharshi talk about Prahlada than me. Why? He is his direct disciple. Narada Maharshi gave life to Prahlada in the womb and gave the spiritual message, knowledge. There's a lot of spiritual knowledge in that canto, seventh canto. So Sri Narada Maharshi came there, Vedavyasa Maharshi moved away and told Narada Maharshi, you can speak now. And that seventh canto, many great devotees of Srimad Bhagavatam says, were actually spoken by Sri Narada Maharshi, and Shukla Brahmarshi has repeated that in the two Parikshit. So that's another thing. So he said to him that now and then you should come and see, and the proof of that is that seventh canto. That Narada Maharshi was visiting while he was compiling Bhagavatam, and in the seventh canto was spoken, Sri Narada Maharshi himself came there to make sure that it's about his devotee, Prahlada, everything is spoken perfectly. Anyway, so at this stage now, all what Vedavyasa has to do now is that Krishna's leelas, pastimes are coming in the heart, inside. Everything is manifesting in the heart. All he had to do was, those leelas what was manifesting inside, he has to put them in the language format. Through a language, he has to put them in the form of verses, like that, right? So in this way, Vedavyasa Maharshi prepared himself to write Srimad Bhagavatam, and the Naimisharanyam, in Naimisharanyam, Sudha Goswami is saying this to Shavanagarshi, and Narada Maharshi is preparing, based on Narada Maharshi's instructions, Vedavyasa Maharshi is preparing to write Srimad Bhagavatam, right? So you can see that in the seventh chapter, what was happening? Bhakti yogena manasi, samyak pranihido amale, apashyal purusham purvam, mayam ja tadubashrayam, it says. What was that? What he is saying is, bhakti has developed in the heart so much for Krishna's bhakti. Because of that, samyak pranihido amale, he could not see anything, two things here existing, right? And all the leela started manifesting within the heart, what he should write down, right? Whatever leela that was coming up, he had to translate that into verses, in the language, right? And he thought himself, where should I start this? All the leelas were coming out, but where should I start Bhagavatam, right? Then he realized that he wrote Mahabharatam before, and in that Mahabharatam, a very fierce battle was spoken. Mahabharatam war was spoken, right? 18 days war in Kurukshetram between Pandavas and the Kauravas, right? The war was over. All the Kauravas died. And if Pandavas were left behind, five Pandavas were left behind, right? And they were exhausted after the war, because Prabhupada says this, I don't know where this is, 640 million people died, it seems, in that war. I mean, such a large number of people died. Loads of countries, people from different parts of the world have participated in that war on different sides, right? And the death, the casualties were very high. Some people say 640 million, some people say less than that. So, anyway, that's not important. That's just the side of it. So, he says that after the war was over, in Kurukshetram, they all were sleeping at night in a, what they call Shibiram. Shibiram means a barracks. The soldiers have their barracks, isn't it, where they sleep at night. So they were sleeping there. Draupadi was there and all her children were there. They were all sleeping. After this huge war was over, right? It was then that Ashwatthama came there. Ashwatthama took the sword in his hand, and with that revenge inside, he came. Ashwatthama had this revenge inside, very strong revenge towards the Pandavas. One reason for that was that Yudhishthira spoke a lie to kill Drona in the battle, right? So he's saying that they have killed my father, and it is one of the major reasons why Ashwatthama felt so strongly against the Pandavas, right? He said that not only Pandavas, the whole Pandava race must finish with this. That was his vow, what he has taken, right? And he wanted that. So right in the middle of the night, he took the sword in his hand and went there to kill. To kill, right? By now, all the Kauravas have gone. They're all dead and gone. Duryodhana is lying there to die. He's not dead yet, he's lying there to die. So after killing these children, he goes there. Now understand that Ashwatthama also a little bit. Ashwatthama has studied Shastram very well. He's the son of Dronacharya. Dronacharya has taught him Shastram everything very well. Right? And he knows very well, when somebody is sleeping, you shouldn't kill them. That is the Shastram. When somebody is sleeping, you shouldn't kill them. That's against the Shastram. Right? But even though he may have studied any Shastram, this thing called revenge inside, it's a Rakshasiya Vikaram it is. Rakshasas have got that kind of thought. Only Rakshasas get it. Revengeful nature. Right? So that revengeful nature inside is considered normally as a Rakshasic emotion. Not even Asuric. It is Rakshasic emotion it is. Right? So, if this Rakshasic emotion grows in the heart, then even if you may have spiritual knowledge, all that spiritual knowledge will go away. It will not have any effect. You may have spiritual knowledge, but spiritual knowledge won't be effective if this Rakshasic nature or called revenge is inside, right? So what did he do? He went there into the barracks, looking this side, not looking this or that side, killed everyone who was present there. And in that process, all Panjali's children were gone. They were all dead, right? And the whole place was full of blood, right? And when they lighted the lamp and looked, all the children were dead and gone, right? All what has happened after that, you can imagine in your own mind, what would have happened in a situation like that, right? So, Ashwatthama wanted to escape from there, but he couldn't. Meanwhile, there was a little battle between Arjuna and Ashwatthama, right? Arjuna tied him down at the end, and he pulled his sword to kill Ashwatthama, right? But Draupadi stopped it. Draupadi said no, right? Muchyadam, muchyadam, he says there, right? Leave him, he said, right? Panjali, Draupadi asked for that. What's the reason? Because if necessary, Arjuna could have killed Ashwatthama, right? But Draupadi's point was, if you kill somebody who has killed the children, children are not going to come back. They've already gone, right? Not only that, that's one logic. Another one, he is the son of the Acharya, Dronacharya's son he is, right? And if you insult the son, it is as bad as insulting the father. So we don't want that sinful reactions. And even after killing him, now what is the point? What will happen is his mother will cry. Kribi will cry. And I don't want her to suffer like the way I am suffering now with the death of the children. So therefore Draupadi said, Muchyadam, Muchyadam. Leave him alone, right? Yudhishthira agreed with that, what Draupadi said. Bhima said no. Kill him inch by inch, he said. Bhima has his nature. He says, we should kill him inch by inch, like that, right? So, at that time, Arjuna Yudhishthira had one view, Draupadi had the same view, Bhima had a different view. So what did Arjuna do? Arjuna looked at Krishna's face, and see what he has to say. That Arjuna, the way Krishna looked at Arjuna, Arjuna understood everything. What was that? Heroes, you don't have to kill them physically, right? What we call as tejovadam, insult them to such an extent that it is as good as killing them. So Arjuna with the sword, he took away in one stretch that Ashwatthama had a jewel on his hair, and that jewel was taken out, insulted him and sent him away from there. It is after this Ashwatthama goes away And then he uses Brahmastram against Parikshit, who was in Uttara Devi's womb. All that story comes later, in Mahabharatam also, right? So this all happened in the night time, right? So, normally, people will think about this war. What will they think? They will think that all Kauravas lost. Nowadays it is like that, isn't it? Germans lost the war. We won the war. That's how here they say, is it not? We won the war, Germans lost the war. That is normal in world, people talk like that. They won, others lost. This is the normal understanding, right? So in the same way, people were saying, Kauravas lost the war, Pandavas won the war. They made it, right? And now they should be very happy. Pandavas should be very happy now because they won the war. But the reality was, that was not the truth. Vedavyas is saying here, that Pandavas were in a more desperate situation than those who dead and gone. That was the situation, right? And they didn't know what to do. They are left with 4 or 5 people. Majority of the population has gone. And not only that, this whole war has become a burden on Yudhishthira's mind. All the children had no father. All the women had no husbands. Imagine a society like that. And that is what was happening there. And the same thing happens every time, with every war, right? So they all went to Ganga River for bathing in the river, and they performed the Udaga Kriya. That means for the forefathers, what you have to do for those who are dead and gone, you have to perform the certain ceremonies for that, like we do these days also, right? So think about this state of Pandavas, what has happened to them. They had to kill their own relations with their own hands, right? And with the same hands, they had to perform their Udaga Kriya also. This is their good fortune, imagine that. With their own hands, they killed their own relations, and with their own hands, they had to perform the Udaga Kriya also, the rituals, for their forefathers, those who are dead and gone, right? So, what does it mean all, right? In any battle, enemies will get killed, right? And this Kurukshetram war, this Mahabharata war, when it was over also, all those who died were his relatives, right? And then they all came back, and ultimately they were all crying. All of them were crying. You can see that in the 8th chapter, who were all crying together, right? Tatra sinam kurupadim dhridarashtram sahanijam gandharim putrashokartam pridham krishnam chamathavam swandvayama samunibir hadabandhun shucharpidan budeshu kalasya gadim darshayanna pratikriyam. If you understand that verse, very important verses, what's he saying there? Gandhari was crying because all her 100 children gone, right? And she had one daughter called Dushala. And that girl, her husband died, so she has become a widow. And Dhritarashtra was also crying. And Karna died, and Kunti Devi was crying. And Abhimanyu died, and Subhadra was crying. And all the 5 children died, Draupadi was crying. Everybody was crying. Right? You can imagine all these women together crying. You can imagine their distress. Everybody gone. What life is for them now? That was the state, right? And nobody to console them about it, right? And Krishna is there. And Krishna didn't console them. You know what Krishna did? He told them a little Vedantam, like he did. And that's what he's saying here. You can see the 4th verse. That is Krishna's Vedantam. Bhudeshu kalasya gadim darshayanna pratikriyam. He says to them, it's all happening because of Kalam. What can anybody do? Right? There is no solution to all these problems. If Krishna wanted, he could have changed the equation. He didn't. Deliberately, he said to them like this, that kalam, time, in its flow, all these things will happen. In other words, Krishna was seeing all this as leela. Others were not able to see it like that. They were crying. Right? So, Krishna has got the capacity to change it. Console them properly. He didn't do it deliberately. He didn't do it. For what reason? Right? He wanted the world to know that war is not the solution to any problem. Right? Because suppose he has consoled them, and if they felt peace and shanti and samadhanam inside, then people will start war again. Another war will start. Because they know that after the war, problems are getting solved. Problems are getting solved. These thoughts will come to them. But when you know that you have to give such a heavy price for the war, let people learn that first. This was in Krishna's mind. And that is why he said that's not the right thing to do. So therefore, he wanted Pandavas and all these women to feel the suffering, and the people to feel the suffering, so that after any war, what will remain at the back is ashanti, no peace at all, and asamadhanam, no samadhanam at all, and the world should learn this. It is for that reason that Krishna didn't do anything about it. That's the one thing to learn from this. And it applies even today. When all these wars are going on thinking that it will solve the problem, it won't solve the problem. That lesson we have to learn in a very hard way. They learn that in a very hard way. Right? So, that is that story. So, from this you can understand from the Vyasanarada Samvadam, unless we learn this thing, what Srinarada Maharshi told Vedavyas, that till we see this life in this world as Krishna's Leela, and Leela should be seen as Leela only, not in any other way. If you don't see it like that, it means that we are attached to it. Attachment is developed inside. And due to that attachment, we will have to go through all the sufferings of life. That important lesson was spoken in those two chapters. Right? Let's go back to where we stopped, that Krishna said that, and that chapter we discussed, 46th and 47th chapter, both chapters we discussed so far, yesterday and today. And in the 48th chapter, what do you find? Krishna's checking the list, whom else have I promised what? So he told Kubja that I'll come and see you one day, when he met Kubja there, Sairandri. So that is the first few verses. Shukha Brahmashi is saying there, he went to Kubja's apartment, wherever she lived, right? Sri Shukha Vaja, Adha Vijnaya Bhagavan Sarvalma Sarvadarshana Sairandriya Kama Taptaya Priyamichan Griham Yayav. That in order to fulfill the desires of Kubja, Krishna went to her home. And Kubja, obviously not very spiritually enlivened person. Not very enlivened spiritually. No knowledge about spiritual life. All she knows is a good, comfortable material happiness life. Life of material happiness. She has decorated her house nicely with good incense and everything. So that when Krishna entered there, it was, he says, things what agitate your mind. A young man, how her mind, she is looking very beautiful now, who? Kubja. So she wanted to agitate Krishna's mind. And in that way, everything was very decorated, and beautiful beds were arranged, thrones to sit, dhubam, deepam, everything there, garlands. And Krishna entered that house. This verse, Shiva Brahmashi is saying, that Krishna sometimes fulfills the desires of people who have got desires. And that is called Sagama Bhakti. When you have Sagama Bhakti, that means you are a devotee, but You have a lot of desires inside. And when it is like that, if your prarabdham allows, Krishna will check your prarabdham list. And if prarabdham allows, he will fulfill that desire. And kubja is in that category. No spiritual interest or anything. And Melpathur abuses kubja for that. Says to her that one who can liberate you from this world, you are asking him for material happiness. Says like that. Yeah. So, she received him very well. And next few verses you can see in that. First few verses only. Talks about how she is approaching Krishna with a lot of lust inside. And Krishna also held her hand and they went to bed together. Right? And the reason for that is, somehow or the other, when Krishna asked for that perfumes from her, Kubja's her mind worked in such a way that she said to Krishna, "This will suit you well. This is meant for you." Unlike the person who didn't offer any clothes to Krishna. Because Kubja did that to Krishna, he says here, even though done voluntarily, and it is not a big thing what she did, she gave the things what she has made for Kamsa, she handed it over to Krishna. Just because she did that, he says, Anulevavarna punyaleshaya. Look at the last line, the sixth verse in the 48th chapter. Remenulevarpana punyaleshaya. She acquired a little punyam from that by offering to Krishna those incense and all the other perfumes, everything what he was preparing for Kamsa. She gave that to Krishna. Therefore, she acquired a little bit of punyam. Punya lesham. Lesham means little bit. Punya lesham. Right? And due to that, Krishna decided that at least she has shown some bhakti. And therefore, Krishna gave that association to her. Right? But she was not very intelligent. After getting Krishna's association, asking for fulfilling the lusty desire is not a very good sign of intelligence. And therefore, Kubja has not been, even though a devotee, has not been, neither Sugar Brahma she liked it, nor many of the greatest, Sridhara Swami liked it, nor Melpathur liked it. They all have nothing much to appreciate her. But they say that because she did this, Krishna gave that opportunity to associate like that. And she had an intimate association with Krishna. And here he's saying there that, on 8th verse if you look, Saivam kaivalyanatham tam prapyam dushprabham ishwaram angar agarpanenaho durbhagedam ayachada. Durbhagedam ayachada, he says. She is a very unfortunate person. Why? Krishna, to whom she has offered that incense and everything, and she got this association with Krishna, she asked for fulfilling the lust desire. That's what she asked. Whereas, what did Uddhava ask? You see, that's the difference between Uddhava and Kubja. Uddhava and Kubja. Right? So, or even compared to gopis, what they've asked to Krishna, that she is, compared to gopis, she is very unfortunate, says Sugar Brahma Rishi about her. Durbhaga. Durbhaga means person with a very bad luck. Very bad luck, right? Anyway, she had the association with Krishna. Aho shyadamiha preshta dinana katijinmaya tramasanul sahe tektum sangam de amburuhekshana. Then she told Krishna, "You should stay with me for a long time." That was her request, right? And but Krishna says, "I have come with the business here. I had a lot of other things to do. I have not come here to stay with you for the rest of the life. Saying that, he he appreciated her, and with Uddhava, Uddhava was with him that time, they left. Krishna and Uddhava left. So there's only about 10 verses to talk about this meeting with Kubja in the Bhagavadam, right? So then some comments there from Sri Shukha Brahman. She says, Duraradhyam Samaradhyam Vishnum Sarveshwareshwaram Yo Vrenidam Anograhyam Asatval Kumanishesau. It is not easy to place Krishna, right? He is the absolute truth, Ishwara of all the Ishwaras, right? And somehow or the other you have pleased her, pleased him. Kubja pleased him through that offering of the perfumes, everything, right? And then you have gone and asked such a silly thing for sense gratification, right? So therefore, she is not very intelligent. Shukha Brahma, she gives this verdict on her. And with that, so 11 verses, with that, it finishes, right? Then Krishna said, thought next whom to go to? Akrura. He has promised Akrura, so he has to go to see Akrura, right? So that's the 12th verse. Akrura bhavanam Krishna saha ramodhava prabhu kinji chigirshen pragad akrura priyakam yayam. So Balram was there, Krishna was there, and so Uddhava was also there. Akrura from the house saw them coming from the gate, from the distance. So immediately Akrura got down and went to them, embraced Krishna and Balram and brought them in. Nanama Krishnam Ramam cha Sadaira Abhivadida Pujaya Masa Vidivad Kridasana Parigrahan. Akrura offered obeisances to Krishna and Balaram. They offered respects to Akrura also. And they were offered seats. And Akrura worshipped them both. Right? Akrura was very happy. Krishna has come home to see him. Right? Padavane jani rabo dharayan shirasa nrupa arkhane ambarer divyer gandhasrak bhushanottamai Architva Shirasanamya Padav Angagado Brajan Prashraya Vanado Akrura Krishna Ramava Bhashada. Then washed his feet, Krishna's feet, and took that water and sprinkled on his head and satisfied. Then in a typical way Aradi was done with the clothes and all the Gandham, Dobam, Deepam, things like that, garlands, everything. According to the system, he had offered us worship, articles of worship to Krishna, right? Then, after offering everything else, right, Akrura put his head at Krishna's lotus feet and offered his obeisances, right? Then Akrura massaged Krishna's and Balaram's feet. And with a lot of humility, Akrura spoke to them, right? Dishtya pāpo hata kamsa sānivo vāmidam kulam bhavadbhyam udhradam kṛcya durandācha samedhidam. Right? He said that, fortunately, that Kamsa is now killed. Kamsa is dead, isn't it? Right? And Kamsa was really a wicked character, evil character, right? And he has been killed with all his friends or his associates, right? And you have also killed all his followers, and therefore that bad administration, evil administration of Kamsa has come to an end, and all the Yadavas are feeling peaceful now. They're feeling more peaceful about it, right? So, and you are still doing things to improve the name of the Yadavas in this world, right? For their welfare and for their benefit, you are still doing so many things for them. And you have released them from their distress and brought them into a happy state, right? Yuvam pradhana purushau jagat dedu jagan mayau bhavadbhyam na vina akinjil param asti na chaparam. Actually, you are present in the whole creation, right? So, Akrura's these verses is on the understanding that Krishna and Balaram is Brahma. Is Brahma. Brahma, right? That's how the Stuti is, right? Then he says that you are the cause of this creation. Every time Stuti comes, all these things will come. Whenever Stuti comes, the truth will be spoken through the Stuti. The philosophy is in the Stuti, right? Because you are the cause of all causes. And why is that you are the cause of everything, right? What is the reason? Because Pragrati and Purusha are both you. He says, in reality, there is no creation. There is no creation, right? So, how can that be said? And that is the next verse. You see the 19th verse? He says, Alma srishtam idam vishwam anavishyasa shakti bhi iyade bahudha brahman shruta pratyaksha gocharam. He is saying that in this, with your energies called Maya, without the help of anything else, with the help of Maya, you are present inside and it appears as though through Namarubam, in different Namarubams, that you are experiencing this world. It appears like that. Yeah? You know how many times this is spoken? Ishopanishad says the same thing. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. That's the first verse in the Upanishad, isn't it? What does it mean? This world is only Krishna. There is only Krishna here, Ishvara. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Everything is Ishvara. Right? Now, if that is not enough, in the 8th canto of Bhagavadam, when Manu spoke, Manu said, Alpavasyam idam vishwam. The whole world is Atma, nothing else. So everything is there in the Shastram. Ishopanishad says, Ishavasyam idam sarvam. 8th canto, 1st chapter itself, Swayambhu Manu says, Alpavasyam idam vishwam. There is only Atma here, nothing else. Otherwise that verse is the same. Alpa vasyam idam vishyam yad kinja jagatyam jagat tena tektvena gunjida nagrida kasya siddhanam. If you compare that verse with the verse in the Ishopanishad, it's one and the same. The only difference is, in the Ishopanishad it says, Isha vasyam idam sarvam. Everything is Krishna here. Nothing else exists here. Instead of saying Krishna is present in everything, In 8th canto, it said, Alma vasyam idam vishwam. The whole world is nothing but Atma. Practically what he is saying is, only Atma exists. Nothing else exists here. And this is the message what Vedavyas is struggling hard to get into our head. Our thick heads. It is not getting in. The proof is that we are as we are. Nothing is changing. And that's why it is so. So that's what has happened. So that's what he is saying here also again, that prapancha karanam, that you are present in the whole creation and karyam will be present, karanam will be present in the karyam, right? Again there are examples, the pot is there and earth is throughout the pot. If you take the earth out of the pot, no pot exists. In the same way, if you take Krishna out of this creation, there is no creation. When we say Krishna, not the person we are talking about, Krishna means that Chaitanyam, Akhanda Bodham, that is Krishna, Akhanda Bodham, the awareness inside. If you take that away from this, then world doesn't exist, is it not? So, the Maya or Prakriti, Maya is called Prakriti, another term for that, Maya. And Chaitanyam is called Purusha. So Maya, sometimes he used the word Maya, or sometimes he used the word Prakriti. Sometimes he used the word Paramatma Chaitanyam, or sometimes you say Paramatma in this way. Chaitanyam you can say, or Purusha you can say, or you can say Paramatma, right? But Paramatma Chaitanyam with Maya is the cause of creation, not Paramatma on its own, right? Paramatma is Purusha and Maya is sometimes called as Pradhanam. In some Shastram it says Pradhanam, right? So in this way, Prakriti and Purusha, one way of saying, Maya and Paramatma, another way of saying, right? But when Maya and Purusha combine together, creation comes. Look at the 19th verse. Atma srishtam idam vishvam anavishyasva shakti bhi iyade bahuda brahman shudha pratyaksha gojaram. And Krishna or Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan, with his various energies, he is creating this prapancham. Various energies means Maya, Ahangaram, Satyugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, all these are his energies, right? With all that. He created this and then he entered into it. Paramatma entered into it. And so, and because he has entered into it, it's him who is in this world in different names and forms. In different names and forms, right? So, Maya's in contribution is Namarupam to it. And Brahmam's contribution is Satya Chitta Anandam, Astibhadi Priyam, right? So, and in this whole creation, which is Namarupam, Krishna is present all the way through, right? And in this creation also, there is a lot of varieties, isn't it? Variegatedness. Look at human species itself. How many, everybody different, one from another. Even Namarupam looks different. What to talk about the Vastu inside. Namarupam alone looks so different, right? And similarly, all other species also, plants, creepers. And similarly, if you look at the animals, animal kingdom, so many varieties there. If you look at the Padma Puranam, it tells you all these things in detail. 8.4 million different species. How many species in the water? How many species in the land? So many species in the air? All these things are spoken there, right? But they are all existing due to the presence of Paramatma Chaitanyam in all of that. So everything in this creation is due to the expansion of the three modes of nature. Sattugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam. And this is how these varieties, variegatedness in this creation, with all that, creation happened. And these Maya Shaktis are Ananda Vaijitrim, lot of variegatedness in there. And this expands as the creation, right? So, again to repeat the same thing, that Paramatma Chaitanyam with Maya does the creation, right? And in everything what has come through Maya, the Paramatma's presence is there, right? That's what he's saying. Iyade bahudha brahman shurda pratyaksha gojaram, he says, right? So, so those things what you can perceive through the senses are called pratyaksham. And those you cannot see through your eyes, but their existence is known from the Shastram. And that is what it is, Shudam. That's called Shudam. One is pratyaksham, what is seen through the eyes. Other one is Shudam. They exist, you have to know about them from Shastram. Right? Means they are not subject to our senses. Right? So, those who can be perceived through the senses, right? But they're known through their senses, right? But those are spoken in the Shastram, We only know about them by hearing about them, right? So those things which are present in the creation, about whom we have heard from the Shastram, you are still present in them, right? And all these various things exist like this, but you are one who is present in everything, right? And this is what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita. You remember when he said that he is present in all of them like a thread. Sutre Manigana Iva, he says. That sutram is Krishna, present in everybody. We'll stop there today. We'll continue next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.